Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rise to our quiet unsing able. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He says he's the terrible. All those working says he's the terrible and the knights of the round table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. The time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Shazam's the Turbo! All those working, Shazam's the Turbo, and the Knights of the Round Table! Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazazradio.com. There's got to be a shorter way to say that. It's like giving me a headache every day I'm going to turn around. But anyway, go to shazazradio.com if you want to join in on the chat. Jump over there to the superchat.html. And while you're on there, if you want to jump over there to see People for People Radio Network, scroll down on the Super Chat Room and you'll find a People for People Radio link. Also check out Wolf Spirit Radio and other affiliated networks actually connected to the page there. You'll find links all over. There's all kinds of links. So anyway, it all started off years ago with a bad dream or a vision of the future of humanity and basically set me on a path to trying to see if I could go out and lobby all my fellow brothers and sisters around the world to try to come together and make things right, fix the world, so to speak. So this is like a little 10-minute podcast there. It talks about 10 ways to fix the world. Not this is just their ideas. It's not my ideas, but we that's what we do here. All kinds of ideas. So I'm just going to play this. I hope everybody can hear it just well, because I'm going to play it right straight through the deal here. So here we go.
As John F. Kennedy once said, "Let us accept our own responsibility for the future." Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we're counting down our picks for the top 10 ways liberals would fix the world.
What we're here to talk about is the solution. I actually think it's really a fairly obvious solution, but it's something that we need to do.
For this list, we're focusing on liberal ideologies that those on the far left believe are the key to solving issues that affect the world. Solutions like establishing world peace are a little too broad to make this list, but we've still deliberately left today's criteria relatively free of restrictions. Number 10, set up a social safety net. As has been demonstrated by dictatorships in countries like Cuba or even Nazi Germany, extreme political and economic systems have had a tendency to wreak havoc on societies, and not just from a morale standpoint. While liberals are not necessarily anti-business or anti-capitalism, they tend to disapprove of extreme laissez-faire economics with no invisible hand to balance out inequalities in income distribution and provide a safety net to the less well-off. That's why, while many liberals are not as far left as socialists, they still believe that wealth should be spread more evenly through taxation and social programs like welfare, food assistance, and public housing subsidies. Number 9. Make college education free. Although it tends to be one of the most hotly debated subjects among politicians, affordable education is one issue where public opinion is relatively unified. At the very least, most liberals and conservatives agree that no one should go into debt while trying to get an education. However, that's the exact situation many students find themselves in, as the average class of 2016 graduate in the U.S. carries nearly $40,000 in debt. Advocates on the left have proposed payment methods that include heavier taxation on the wealthiest 1% and reduced spending elsewhere in the budget. Those liberals see unlimited benefits to free education, saying that it would foster innovation, imagination, and exploration beyond what's currently possible. Number 8. Discover alternatives and solutions to deforestation, air pollution, land pollution, etc. Climate change may take a backseat to threats of terrorism when it comes to the evening news, but every recent liberal political platform makes clear that the left continues to see it as a real, worrisome, and man-made problem. As a general rule, liberals consider issues like deforestation, as well as air and land pollution, as controllable through self-discipline and innovative alternative solutions. Those liberal solutions include converting to smaller scales of operation, localizing industry, and accepting green energy. However, leftists are quick to say that as long as humanity cannot wholly commit to this ideological shift, the planet is doomed. And while some say that's an alarmist view, there is scientific evidence to support it. Number 7. Stop business and political corruption and greed. While this concept is definitely pushing the idealism to the point where you have to suspend your disbelief, it's also one of the few that most people on either side of the political spectrum can agree on.
Banks took the money the American people gave them and they used it to pay themselves huge bonuses and lobby the Congress to kill big reform.
Corruption, whether political or private, essentially hurts everyone. The backlash against corruption, both real and perceived, can be seen in a number of different movements and causes. From the protesters of Occupy Wall Street to the insurgent candidacies of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Liberals would say there's too much money in politics, and conservatives, well, they generally agree with that too. The disagreements only arise when you ask them who's the best person to fix it.
You know what I hate about banking? It reduces people to numbers. Here's a number. Every 1% unemployment goes up, 40,000 people die. Did you know that?
No.
Number 6. Use sustainable energy. It's almost a given that liberals see ending land, air, and water pollution as a vital issue. And according to them, that means embracing new ideas and pushing forward with innovation with regards to sustainable energy sources. Advocates suggest that sustainable energy is the future, arguing that we must both invest and explore efforts to end our reliance on fossil fuels.
This is actually how most power in the world is generated with fossil fuels.
They say that money must be funneled into energy research so that the possibilities can be sufficiently explored. According to the left, the beauty of sustainable energy is that once it's achieved and in widespread use, it will keep giving back.
We have this handy fusion reactor in the sky called the sun. Okay? You don't have to do anything. It just works.
Number 5. Achieve gender equality.
Women deserve equal pay for equal work.
Liberals suggest that while it appears that gender equality is a modern reality, the subject is actually more nuanced. In America, women reportedly make 79 cents to the dollar of what men make for the same job, with some sources saying it's less than that for women of color. In the third world, women are commonly subjected to violence and refused education and health care, among other issues. While those on the right have made strides to back gender equality, historically the left has more fervently supported the subject. Leftists believe that inequality is out of date in our modern world and call for the abolition of such practices worldwide.
I understand one of the priorities for you was to have a cabinet that was gender balanced. Why was that so important to you?
Because it's 2015.
Number 4, end poverty. One word that liberals use to describe poverty statistics? Staggering. By the numbers, in 2014, 47 million Americans lived in poverty. Those statistics worsen when viewed on a global scale, as approximately half the world's population lives under the poverty line. Those on the left believe that it's important to end poverty, but what's more, they also believe there's enough wealth in the world to do it. Idealists point to uneven wealth distribution as a main culprit and suggest that generosity and philanthropy are solutions to poverty, while skeptics push for heavy taxation on the rich to help spread the wealth. Number 3. Ratify a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We've all heard platitudes like treat others as you wish to be treated, and all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. That all men are created equal.
And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 1948, was created with those ideas in mind. However, many liberals question its effectiveness in today's society, pointing to the racism, sexism, and homophobia that pervade the world, as well as things like slave-like labor conditions seen in the Far East, and the refugee crisis in Europe, as confirmation that a new declaration is needed. Number 2. End world hunger. No matter which side of the political spectrum you're on, the stats tell the same story. 1 in 9 people in the world is undernourished. 98% of the hunger crisis is in developing countries. 1 in 4 people in sub-Saharan Africa is undernourished, as is 2/3 of Asia. Those hunger statistics encourage liberals to look for solutions to ensure that the over 7 billion human inhabitants each gets enough food. And their ideas include giving developing countries the tools to farm and produce, as well as education and healthcare to ensure those countries can continue to progress. Before we unveil our number 1 pick, here are some honorable mentions.
Right,
number 1.
Podcast.
Establish universal health care. Many liberals believe that one of the most egregious human rights violations is the refusal to acknowledge that everyone is entitled to live.
Transplant surgery is very expensive.
In most cases, prohibitively so. They cite incidents where people are refused medical services because they can't provide health insurance, or when a child in a third world country can't receive any treatment because there's simply none available, as evidence that some people are denied that basic right. The leftist solution is universal health care. Their proof that it can work: those European countries that offer health coverage to all their citizens. However, as long as it's controlled and funded by the government, the idea of universal health care will be a divisive one between the left and the right in the United States. Do you agree with our list? How would you fix the world?
It is time to do away with workplace policies that belong in a Mad Men episode.
For more engaging top tens published every day, be sure to subscribe to WatchMojo.com.
To really make a difference, it will take a humanitarian effort on a much bigger scale.
Well, that's one I can agree with. Anyway, so I typed in a deal on Google, fixing the world, and come up with a list that said, so what are the sustainable development goals this time around? And I guess I'll just post this link down there, but I'll read out this list. It says, number one, end poverty in all forms everywhere, end hunger, achieve food security and improve nutrition, and promote sustainable agriculture, ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages, ensure inclusive and equitable quality education and promote lifelong learning opportunities, achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls, ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all, ensure access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, and modern energy for all, promote sustain inclusive and sustainable economic growth, full of productive employment and decent work for all. Now see, I didn't put all the numbers in front of that. We're at number 9 now. I'm terrible for reading live. Anyway, number 9 says build resilient infrastructure, promote inclusive and sustainable industrialization, and foster innovation. Number 10 says reduce inequality within among countries. Number 11, make cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. Number 12, ensure sustainable consumption and production patterns. Number 13, take urgent action to combat climate change and its impact. Oh, would be number 13. Never mind. Okay, number 14, conserve and sustainably use the ocean, seas, marine resources for sustainable development. Number 15, protect, restore, promote sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems, sustainably manage forest, combat desertification, that's a weird word, halt and reverse land degradation and halt biodiversity loss. Number 16, promote peaceful, inclusive societies for sustainable development, provide access to justice for all, and build effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels. Strengthen the meaning of implementation and revitalization, the global partnership for sustainable development. Now my eyes are crooked. All right, so anyway, that's the list of what the brilliance of the world want to try to achieve. And, you know, where I could stand there and I could agree with a lot of what they want to try to achieve, it's just, I don't know, man. You're looking at a mess, a real, really large mess. You're looking at a world that didn't get this way overnight, and it's going to take quite a long time. But it's like, you know, sometimes I go inside this old house that I got, and now it's kind of being used for a shop, but it's so cluttered up and messed up that when I go in there, I get incredibly discouraged. And I look at this mess and I'm like, ah, forget it. I'll work on it later. Well, later never comes. It just gets to the point where it's so overwhelming, you'd be better off just to tear the place down and start over fresh. Now, am I saying we need to tear the world down and start over fresh? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's pretty huge task when you look at it. On an individual scale, I think to myself, you know, well, if I could just get people to listen to me and my words of wisdom, maybe I could inspire them to want to work with me to do this together. But then I realize I'm just one person. I'm just an insignificant person out here, and really nobody of notoriety that anybody would, you know, listen to as far as somebody who is, you know, somebody to look up to or whatever. That's not, you know, that's not me. I'm just a guy with ideas and a big heart, hoping that maybe I can say something that will start off this ripple of waves that goes out into the world, and people say, you know, that guy's got a good idea. You know, I don't want to be the leader. I don't want to be the savior, so to speak, or anything like that. I'm not even qualified for that. But I'm just a person who thinks like a whole lot of other people out there who believe that we could actually fix this world if we really chose to do so. Even as overwhelming as the task appears, that we, if we decided to, we could come together and we could resolve all the issues of the world. You just heard the list. Now, I basically, those are two lists. One from a liberal point of view, and the other one, I guess, from a world organization type of view. And there's other views out there. There's people that actually believe that we need to depopulate the world in order to make the world a better place. Which, if you've ever heard any of my shows, you understand that that's something I think is pure ridiculousness. I mean, who gets to decide on who has to go in order to make this world a better place? You know, some would say that all the politicians and all the bankers need to go, and then we'd have a better place. You know, while that sounds a bit humorous, it's just they're still people too, regardless of how ridiculous some of their ideas are and things like that. But nonetheless, we still have this overwhelming task before us, and it. At some point, you know, it looks impossible. It quite literally looks impossible. Fixing the impossible. Is it even possible to fix the impossible? That's the big question of today. Now, I sit there and I think about all these different issues out there, and there's a lot of them, and your head will start spinning when you start to think about everything. How to end the wars. How to get people to sit down and stop fighting just long enough to look at some common sense things, you know. Something as simple as, hey, you know, you're getting mad at a country over there and you're going to teach them a lesson. You're going to go over there and drop a bomb on them. In the process, take out what some in the upper echelon would call collateral damage. To me, collateral damage, there is no such thing as collateral damage, only atrocities. When you take a human life for any purpose or any reason under the sun, it's a terrible thing. You know, I know that the world isn't so wonderful that you can believe that there aren't rotten people in this world that do really terrible things. And I mean terrible things. And those kind of people, you would want to think, well, you know, maybe we should just whack them all, you know, just death sentence to everybody, you know. But I think back in this whole process, and I know there's greedy people and there's terrible people, and we lock a lot of people up in jail, some of which don't even belong in jail as far as I'm concerned, because their crimes don't fit the punishment, so to speak. But nonetheless, it's like a never-ending cycle. Now, I can understand we're fighting against an evil of biblical proportions as far as my view goes. That there's a darkness in this world that really does some really terrible things to people. And people do terrible things to people. So we're going to have to get past something. There's a door that we can't seem to get people to walk through. And that's that door that's inside of each and every individual out there that basically, you know, is their heart, their love, their decency, their goodness, or whatever, you know. No, it doesn't matter to me whether you believe or disbelieve in a higher power such as God or, you know, whatever. It's that if you actually sit down here and look at the fact that we're all in this boat and we're going through whatever time or space that really exists and we're traveling here together, and some in this boat are like really super miserable. Some can't get no food. Some can't get no comfort. You know, and most can't get any peace. And I'm thinking, you know, if we have to be here, you know, if we actually have to be here, then why not try to make this better for everybody? You know, that kind of, I guess, it kind of makes me sound crazy, but it's the kind of crazy that I just can't shake. I've had some really terrible dreams. I don't know, some might even call them visions of what the future of humanity would be on the path that we are actually walking. And there's a lot of people out there speaking out and doing good things. There's a lot of organizations that actually come together and they try to work on world hunger and you know, homelessness and all that. So it's not like nobody's doing nothing. So don't get me wrong. It is nowhere near the fact that nobody is doing nothing. Is that the task is overwhelming, that those individuals actually need some help. You know, these problems that we've got in the world, they don't get better. They just kind of exponentially, if I can get that word out right, I have a hard time talking these days for some crazy reason, they get bigger, you know, and it's kind of like, it seems like it doubles down the longer it goes and the worse it gets. Now, I know I sound like I'm rambling, and I probably am. I'm probably ranting. But I'll get to the point eventually in this show that I'm trying to say to everybody. It's just that some days when you wake up and you think, yeah, you know, I got to find some words of wisdom, and I got to put them down here for the people that listen into my radio show, and I got to try to, you know, make the best. If it's the only time I'm ever going to get to say anything, I got to make it the best I possibly can to inspire as many souls as I can to try to work towards heading towards that light that I think we have the capability of doing. The dreams and the visions that I had of our future, they're terrible, you know. And if you got any kind of good heart or whatever, and if you actually experience those kind of visions and dreams of where we're actually heading, it makes you motivated to want to do whatever you can and say whatever you can to make things right before they go severely wrong. And there's people out there in this world that need help. They seriously need help. And there's a lot of people out there in this world that just haphazardly go through life and don't understand, or maybe don't even care that the world is in the shape that it's in. But I don't know anybody who could actually walk through society these days and see all the things that are going on and not even being remotely concerned. So with that said, hi Barbara, how you doing?
Hi Shaziz. It's good to be here with you.
I threw a head spinner on the table.
Well, you know what I noticed in all those video or all those audios that you played, there was not one mention of spirituality.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
And I think, and I have said this over and over again, this is a key piece. I really truly believe in it, and I'm not talking about, again, I must emphasize, I'm not speaking about religion, I'm speaking about spirituality, a connectedness or an awareness or a consciousness about something omniscient or bigger than us, you know. We have, I think people, humanity has come to a place where they believe they are the significant one. The significant ones, the only ones who have the answer. You know, we rely and are dependent upon authorities to give us the answers. They've set themselves in a good position to do that, and most of the population is just lollygagging along. You know, just following their lead, without their own personal connectedness to that important piece within themselves. So I was interested to listen to those solutions for a troubled world, and they're missing a key piece in my estimation. And so I think there are many solutions. I don't think, I guess I just have my own sense that nothing is impossible. That's something I've lived my life with. Until I give it everything I possibly can and try all avenues and work towards everything that I could draw to a solution or receive guidance or work toward a solution, I try every avenue. Most people, when they say, well, that's impossible, they don't even attempt anything, you know. I'm not like that. When someone says to me my idea or something that I feel would be helpful or change something, and I express that, then I would have, if a person said to me, well, that's not going to work, that's impossible, I don't stop my process because I rely on something greater, and that's where my spirituality comes in. I have a faith and a trust in solutions for the impossible. And it may not be immediate, and that's where your trust and faith comes in, of course, but we must participate. I feel we must participate. Most people have that, I guess, that knee-jerk reaction. They put up limitations upon themselves, or they believe that they are limited. Well, they're certainly told that they're limited. You have, you know, you're not as good as the authorities, or you don't have the wherewithal of the authorities, or you don't have the knowledge or the wisdom of the scientists or the authorities or whomever is running the place. So people are sort of like on, I could say, on a lower echelon of belief in themselves and faith and trust and their own in power, their own wisdom, their own knowledge, their own truth meter, their own abilities, their own gifts. So I look at this in the way when I'm met with a problem or a solution, or I receive something that may indicate that this may help or change something, and people say, well, that's not going to work, or that's impossible. I don't stop in my tracks, because there's something inside of me that I know I must go forth and try every possible situation or circumstance or idea that comes to me, and I seek and I reach out for more and more and more until I guess I could say until I know within myself that I have attempted every possible thing for this solution. And at that point, if I see, okay, that is not going to be solved or resolved, that is when I will say, and I won't say, okay, it's never going to work. I just say, this isn't meant to be right now. I don't throw the solution I don't throw the idea of a solution to a problem out the window. I never do that. I just come to a point where I have given it my all. I have tried every avenue. I have determined everything that I possibly could imagine or given or guidance until I've, looked in every nook and cranny and every corner, under every rock, every stone, behind everything, and in the darkness too. And then I will say, okay, in the moment, in this timeline, this is not meant, but I'm not saying I give up, and I'm not saying that it's impossible. I never say that. So I'm just saying that most people tend to jump into that place immediately where, well, that's impossible. You know, they don't even attempt to try. They will not even, give it a try, give it a whirl, or even contemplate a possibility of a solution. They immediately jump to, that's impossible. Yeah. So now, Nikola Tesla, I put up this little quote from Nikola Tesla. I think this is very key, and I've spoken about this numerous times as well, many of us have, and it says, though free to think and act, we are held together like the stars in the firmament with ties inseparable. These ties cannot be seen, but we can feel them. And that's Nikola Tesla. And that's what we're talking about. We can feel, okay, the ties or the firmament, the links, energetically or frequency-wise. And here's the next quote that I put in, which I think this is really key as well. We're talking about a positive world revolution, okay, not a harmful revolution. We're talking about an awakening, a world revolution to change the troubles that we're in or where we see or maybe a fear, the direction that we're going. So a world revolution results from personal revolution in individual people's lives. As you change yourself, you can change the world in the process. And I fully, fully believe in that because I go back to what Nikola Tesla said, that we are, okay, held together. Even though we think and act freely, we are still held together like the stars in the firmament and with ties that are inseparable. These ties cannot be seen, but we can feel them. So we're talking about energies and frequencies here that we feel and sense and are connected through those frequencies or waves of energies. And so go back to, as you change yourself, you can change the world in the process. And that is a basis, a foundation for the guidance and wisdom and information that has come to me over 30 years to do certain works to help people to change their lives. And you talked about people don't have peace. It is how basically to realize inner peace, you know, in this manner, an understanding that we can change the world through our own frequency and vibration. So that's where I'm going to start.
All right. That's wonderful. Yesterday, after I did the Mad Science show, and I was uploading the podcast and thinking about, you know, how all this information gets sent out to everybody in hopes that they'll be able to see, you know, and maybe, you know, get some benefit out of it all. I wrote this little post out here on Facebook. It said, "If I only had one wish and could have anything in the world I wanted, my wish would be that everyone in the world would hear my words and those words would inspire all of you to work together to make the world a better place for everyone. I do believe in the dream and I have been seeking the dream team that will help me to help the world to use all our gifts combined to make this a wonderful place to live. We have everything we need to fix it all. Only catch is we must do it together. Give me a chance to speak to the world, and I will give everything that my soul has to offer just for the chance to make things right for all those generations to come. We have the power to make it so, and the only question is at this point in the game is, will we use that power to bring about heaven or hell on earth? The book says someday God will fix it all, but I believe my God gave us everything we need to do it ourselves if we only choose to do so with all the gifts that we have been given. And even if you are not a believer in a higher power, to be honest, you would have to agree if we came together, we could do some very amazing things. Evil likes to crush dreams while the heart likes to create new. My question to the world, light or dark, which one are you? This message I threw into the river of data that we call the internet in hopes that it reaches and inspires each and every one of you. Help me help you to make our world all it can be. Peace and love to all."
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say we need to have a... Here's my perspective, Shaziz. I feel we need to know that those beautiful words that you just spoke are reaching people. Okay, that's going to be the power that you give them. Our words are very powerful. And if we present something to the universe listens, and that energy or the frequency of your words spreads out throughout that web and that frequency that Tesla was speaking about, our connectedness. So, and when I say a positive or a prayer or a communication to the universe, it's very important that to know that you are manifesting and how we manifest is that we manifest as it in, let me rephrase this. To manifest in a way that it is effective is to know within your whole self that what you present to the universe as positives will be connecting to the whole. Because if you take what Tesla has said, we are all, as in everything, meaning we. And when we say the word Metakuyeo Yasin, that's what that means. We are all related, okay? Now, it doesn't mean we're just all brothers and sisters of this earth. What it means is that we are all connected energetically, frequency-wise, just like what Tesla spoke about. Now, I'm not a scientist, and I have used this phrase for I can't even know how long, and the wisdom and knowledge come to me that we are all connected through a frequency, either positively or negatively. Okay, and Tesla was a scientist and an amazing, brilliant man, and I think he was plugged into Source. That's my perception. And he taught us many things about where we are today, how to really resolve. What we're talking about is how to resolve or fix the issues or the problems, or can we fix the impossible? And as I said to you earlier, just a little bit when I started, I believe that we can fix the impossible, and I believe that we must never give up. I believe that we must not be defeated, because that is what that whomever set up the impossible or what appears to be impossible wishes is for us to give up. So that's what I say. Now imagine this, because I talked about the key piece to me when you wrote, when we heard all of those audios that you described the solutions of solving this and solving that, not once did anyone mention the spiritual aspect or spirituality. Again, I'm not emphasizing religion. I'm speaking about something on a whole other level. And to me, it's sort of like when you are in that spiritual flow, you know that you are connected to Source and connected to all creation, because that's what that really means, that you are one particle within a mass of particles that are, you know, energy frequencies, which makes up humanity and all creation. So imagine this. So if everyone began to, whenever they were going to make a plan or determination or act, that they had this connectedness to the sacred within them, or the omniscient, or something, a being, a greater being, you could call it God, we call it Wankantanka, Tokashila, Great Spirit. It doesn't matter, but if someone, everyone started their life, their daily life, with this connectedness, with this connection to the awesome, the miracle, right? This would make a huge change in the world if everyone had this awareness and this consciousness of something far greater than themselves. And again, it does not matter what you call that or refer to that is. It's not about religion. This is about a spiritual connection, connectedness, an inner standing that we are all one. And the law of creator is, the law of creation, or the law of one, is about that. And Tesla knew that. And we know that. So I feel that there's a big missing piece here, and it is that inner standing that we are ultimately and extraordinarily all connected. And what we do, how we speak, how we move in the world affects everything, and we are manifesting. So when you manifest, when you want to manifest something in the positive, you must present it to the universe as that it is already. Not that it's going to come, not that maybe it'll be here, or not that I hope it will touch people, but that it is, that it will, and that's how the universe functions.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. So when we speak to the universe, we have to know that the universe is listening. So when you present that beautiful, you know, those beautiful words that you just said, you added, I hope. I'm hoping that this reaches people. Now, you have to know that it is reaching people, and you may not be aware of it. It may not be right in your face, but ultimately, everything we do and speak about is reaching people. So it's not, if you say, I hope, that it's sort of like a wavering commitment. it's sort of like a little taste or a little trickle of doubt in there, because I'm not so sure. I'm hoping that this will work. I'm hoping that people will realize this. I'm hoping that people will change. So in order to manifest in a powerful way that the universe is going to respond, because the universe responds accordingly. Now, how does it respond accordingly? Because it's a frequency. So when you empower your words in the positive, okay, the universe responds to affect all things in the positive that you are creating and manifesting with your words. You see how that works?
Yeah, there's a deal, I can't remember who wrote it or what it was all about per se, but there's a deal about 6 degrees of separation where, like...
That's correct.
If you could actually connect with 6 people a message, that they would connect with the next in line and so on down the line until it finally went all the way around the world, which basically shows that in some way or another, through somebody, we know everybody. And ironically enough, this particular post that I just read out was gathered up by 6 people out there in that big river that I call data, that you know, is the social media network. And the first one was Stephen Roberts on Facebook. He said, it all boils down to what you want in your life or what you need in your life. And he had a question mark at it. And so Matthew Maxey on the Facebook said, love you, brother. God bless you and your family. Theobald, I can't even pronounce it, Jamson, said, 13.56 megahertz, seawater as fuel. And Sharon Henderson said, I will share this. How about you do a video? And William Barhorst, he had a little bit more of a lengthy deal. He said, God gave us everything we need to live a wonderful, healthy, prosperous life, but the powers that be prevent us through many conspiracies, which I have had several I worked on and found to be true. God gave us every seed yielding plant, many which are cures, but the pharmaceutical industry and all the government heads don't want us to know these cures, so they can mimic God's creation using drugs so that they may make money. The same with the petroleum companies. We have technology that to run vehicles on vapors and water, but again, they block it and gave even killed people with the with this knowledge. I have a can that gets over 300 to 600 miles per gallon. A few videos on my YouTube channel prove it. We need to share all this information to I can't read that part, as a community, all natural raising our own crops and poultry, pigs and cattle, the way that God intended, helping each other, not using as much money, because we'd help each other to do for each other as was done before money was created, and bartering with labor and I can't even read that one, goods and knowledge. I can provide a lot of this wisdom and would gladly speak on this to any group that wants to know how to get your free energy to, like Nikola Tesla did, from both atmosphere and the ground. Why pay for energy when you can get it free? Because the powers that be forbid us to use the technology, which is also atmosphere safe because no carbon nuclear power is needed. And then last but not least, Mark Rollins on Facebook said, if a mustard seed can move mountains, I bet positive words and enlightenment can do just as well. It is possible to spread it, just got to keep at it. And so those are 6 messages that came out through the one that I posted out there. So it could be very well possible that that message might actually reach the entire world. So, you know, there is...
Well, don't say possible. See, again, our language, the words we use affect the universe's response. So it's sort of like, okay, you know, maybe it will. It's possible. I hope that it does. I hope... So the power of our words is so significant. When you're going to manifest, or you're going to, let's say you're going to pray for someone who's ill, and you get a group of people, and you sit down and you start praying. You know, if you start out by saying, well, let's hope that this works, the universe is listening. Oh, so there's no urgency here. They're just kind of like hoping. They don't have a power behind that. That this, our prayers are powerful. We are sending these prayers to make a difference, to bring healing and light and harmony and balance to that person. That's a huge difference when the universe is listening. If we believe that the universe, through frequencies and through language and emotion and everything, is responding in kind to what it receives, because it does, then we must form our words, our language, and our intention.
To back up what you're saying is, in the process of reading all that, I got another notification on there that 9 others liked the comment, and so that would post on their place, and one person shared it within the time that I just read that on there.
Oh, so you see, and talking about the 6 degrees of separation, you know, our world is becoming smaller. I mean, scientifically, it has been proven about the 6 degrees of separation. But we have to also know that our world is getting smaller and smaller because of our connectedness through technology, right?
Yeah.
So we have that also, but ultimately creation has been set up originally through a connectedness of relationship, frequency, energies, feeling, sensing. So we are ultimately, that's why the word Mitakweo Yasin is so key to understand. It means we are all related, and people just take that as simple, well, people are all related. But no, it goes further and deeper, meaning we are all connected to everything, all of creation. Oh, when people think all of creation, oh, that must mean the earth. Yes, it does mean the earth, but then the frequencies and energies are infinite. And the infinity of an energy and frequency goes out through the whole of the cosmic web. And as Tesla said, okay, you know, basically we are held together. We are connected like the stars in the firmament with ties inseparable. Okay? So yeah. They can't be seen, but we can feel them. And that's what we speak about when we say our sensory perceptions or our sensory abilities. Now, here's an issue that we are dealing with today. We are dealing with people's being disconnected or dissociated from their sensory abilities, from feeling. Okay, like when you talk about people walking past a child on the roadside, you know, starving and looking for water, and people just walk by and walk by and walk by. Just like when we say the posters for missing children, missing children, missing children, people don't even see them anymore. They're just insensitive to it.
Yeah.
So how can you sense a positive flow of energy coming toward you that can change your life if you are disconnected and disassociated? Now, the dissociation of humanity is a deliberate. We know that by now. We all should know that, right?
Yeah.
So this is what we're dealing with today. We have an extraordinary power to change the world. And it, right away, if somebody out there listening says, well, that's ridiculous. It's too bad. It's too awful out there. It's worse than it's ever been, and it's hopeless. And what can I do? I'm only one person. That's the energy that you are wallowing in. That's where you're going to stay, and then that's what you will manifest, because what goes round comes round. What you focus on, you create and manifest. And this is the power that we must understand. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, like in the process when I explained how I started reading that, you know, got 9 more likes on the deal and one person to share it out there. So there's, if you actually calculate up all the numbers, the way that Facebook works, 6 people commented on there, so that'll show up on their timeline.
6 degrees of separation. This is the power that we have, and so now we have Facebook, okay? This is what I'm talking about, what connects us, you know, through technology. I mean, I write on the 13 Grandmothers Spiritual Connection site because I've been invited to do that, And I reach over 2,000, 3,000 people who respond and then pass what I've written, which are spiritual teachings or awareness or insightfulness or healing information or whatever. And then there will be shares. So the people over 2,000 to 3,000 people plus, there's a percentage that will take what I have written and post it somewhere else and share it somewhere else. And then somebody else will, this is the web. This is the web that I'm speaking of. Okay? It's an energetic, it's a frequency, it's a connectedness throughout the whole world now, today, with technology. But that existed before technology. Okay, yeah. So we have to realize that, and that's what Tesla was speaking about, okay?
Well, in the process of just the first portion of the show, I had a point that I wanted to get to of the show, and I probably would have waited a lot longer in the process of actually, you know, there is a method to my madness every time I say something crazy on this radio show. But the question was fixing the impossible. And what I've showed and you've showed in just this little episode right here and what you just got through explaining about how many people were actually connecting, there was a person who had not so recently said that all we ever do is talk. We don't provide any solutions. We don't get anything done. And all we ever do is talk.
Is that Eeyore?
Yeah. Well,
you know that Eeyore, that little donkey in Winnie the Pooh?
Yeah. That was pretty
good. Eeyore, woe is me, doom and gloom, never end of boo 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 boo.
Yeah, but what we just proven here was that nothing is impossible.
That's correct.
And that we are getting things done because just a small amount of numbers that we mentioned right here, you know, there's supposedly 7 to 9 billion people on this planet. Well, some of which don't have internet access, but you would be surprised at how many people would get off the internet and go tell somebody in their neighborhood what they just read or experienced.
Well, that has happened before the internet. That was what happened. The one little community of people had a story or had a happening or had a miracle or had an idea or a suggestion or a solution, and another person left that little community on their travels and they shared that. And then another, so this is how this went in the world before the internet. People talk to each other.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, that we just took a leap from high-tech communication like we're doing right now to somebody gets off of the internet and go does it the old school way, why by word of mouth they spread the message, even if it's as slow as the
Pony Express. People can't help themselves.
There you go.
I mean, that's human nature. We if something occurred that is monumental or striking or exciting or unbelievable or significant, people share it. They can't help themselves. And that goes both ways. It's the negative and the positive. People can't help themselves. So this is, but we have to become conscious in our understanding of who we are, the power that we have to change what people call the impossible. I don't use that word, frankly. It's not part of my language. I don't believe that there is anything like that. I believe that there are solutions, and it may not be in the timeline that we would like it, but if we focus on changing it in a positive way, it may happen down the road. It's like planting seeds. When I talk about we are seed planters, you know, when you go to the garden with your seeds, you hold them in your hand and you have an intention. You may not be speaking it or aware of it, but it's even more powerful when your intention to those seeds is gratitude, number one. Gratitude because I know the seed, your mind is saying, this seed is going to bring me food. It's going to bring me abundance and health and well-being from me and my children. So when you hold that seed and you put it in the Mother Earth, when you take a little space and you put a little hole in that Mother Earth, you are connected energetically and frequency-wise with your intention. Now, you wouldn't go to the garden with a seed and have an intention of this isn't going to work. This is going to, you know, give me nothing or it's going to be whatever, poisoned or so. So we plant seeds with an intention. Your intention is key. Your intention is a frequency. And you can do it two ways. You can go with that seed, which is your voice.
Yeah.
Well, which is your...
I would hope that when people actually read my words, that they can actually, through that frequency of how I delivered that message, feel my words, feel my heart.
Well, that's very important. When you say something positive, loving, kind, compassionate, people feel that, and they vibrate that. You are the seed planter. You planted the seed, and the persons around you, and on to the 6 degrees of separation and throughout the whole of the web into the cosmic realm, feels that positiveness, love, compassion, or the opposite. If you say something negative or hurtful or harmful, or you plant a seed of despair or darkness or doubt, you are affecting the whole. The same way that Tesla said, again, right, that we are connected through the stars and the firmament with ties inseparable, inseparable, inseparable. Think of that word, inseparable. We are inseparable. We are powerful. We have amazing ability to change what we are told is impossible. So if you glom onto the word impossible, that's what you're going to experience, period.
Yeah.
So your intention is key. Intention can be corrupted. Let's look at that. So I work with people to learn how to manifest in the positive or things in their life. And I work with people who have cancer, who have been told or diagnosed that they have 6 months to live or whatever. And so we must understand in this process the power of energy and frequency that our whole being has. Our mind, let's say, is a monkey mind, is a computer that downloads all manner of stuff. It could be something wonderful, or it could be something negative or fearful or joyous, or that's what the mind does, the monkey mind. The mind has a mind of its own. If we are disconnected from our sensory ability and our inner knowing, the spirit that is within us and source, our mind will rule us. The monkey mind will just randomly give us all kinds of crap and talk to our immune system. When we speak, our whole body responds, just like the universe. So when we say, I'm sick, my body's sick, and the doctor told me I'm going to be dying and I have 6 months to live, your body is alert to that. Your immune system is responding. That's the power that we have. The same thing with the universe. The universe is listening and responding in kind. So when you're working with manifesting the positives, you must be alert to the sensory experience of a negative trying to interfere, and that often is your monkey mind. So here you went to the doctor, right? And the doctor said, well, I'm very sorry, so-and-so, but yeah, we've done everything we possibly can, and you have 6 months to live, and that's the end. Go home and prepare to die. And now you're there, and you go home, and you're trying to figure out what to do, and maybe you take a chance and go see somebody that might help you, or help you to heal, or help you to have a different perspective. So now you're going to try manifesting the positive, or healing, or frequency, healing energy. So a person will say to the universe, because we are always speaking to the universe, remember now, your words are constantly speaking to the universe, and the universe is constantly replying or reacting or acting in kind to whatever it receives from you. So the person says, well, I said to them, well, let's talk about positives. Let's do some affirmation terms, okay? Affirmation is, for instance, my body is healthy. My immune system is functioning perfectly and beautifully, and my body is healing. Just those simple words, right? So a person can say those words, but the monkey mind will come in and say, are you crazy? The doctor just told us. We're dying. We're done. It's hopeless. There's no nothing's going to change. That just threw the wrench in your positive frequency that you put out 2 seconds before to the universe.
Yeah.
That's disruptive and corruptive, so you must be alert to the training, programming, and brainwashing that your monkey mind is feeding you, and that's a frequency. You can feel it, you can sense it. So now what you have to do is you have to rephrase your affirmation to the universe, because there may be a word in there that triggers the negative belief that, no, the doctor just said, we're done. Okay, see how that works?
Yep. There's a man named Henry Ford. You familiar with Henry Ford?
I don't know.
Well, He must have had some words of wisdom along the same lines of what you're trying to explain to everybody. Henry Ford was an American captain of industry and a business magnate, the founder of the Ford Motor Company and the sponsor.
Oh, sure, of course, that Henry Ford.
Yeah, yes. The development assembly line technique of mass production. Well, something about Henry Ford that most folks don't realize, he's always saying, you know, profound things. And I'm going to read, there's a top 10, I'll post this link into the chat room in case somebody ever wants to, you know, repost it or something like that. But anyway, his number 10 of his top quotes was, "Life is a series of experiences in which one..." Life is a series of experience, each one of which make us bigger, even though sometimes it is hard to realize this, for the world was built to develop character, and we must learn that setbacks and griefs which we endure help us on our marching onward. In number 9, he said, "A business that makes nothing but money is a poor business." Number 8, he said, "If you think you can do a thing or you think you can't do a thing, you're right." Number 7, yes, he said, "Obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off your goal." Number 6, he said, "Quality means doing it right when no one is looking." Number 5, he said, "Don't find fault, find a remedy." Number 4, he said, "When everything seems to be going against you, remember that the airplane takes off against the wind, not with it." Number 3, he said, "If everything is moving forward together, then success takes care of itself." Number 2, he said, "Failure is simply the opportunity to begin again, this time more intelligently.
That's correct, yes.
And at number 1, he said, "My best friend is the one who brings out the best in me."
Well, so one thing that it sounds like these successful people have is they don't believe in mistakes, number 1. Okay, I don't believe in mistakes either. Okay. I believe, and we've read over and over again or hear stories about a mistake that actually became something extraordinary, you know.
Yeah.
And that's up to us, of course. If your experiment in life doesn't work at first, don't give up. You know, never, ever, ever give up, okay, until you have exhausted all possibles, all aspects, and then just sit with it with faith and trust and know that in time, your intention for something positive and good will unfold. You know, there's another timeline going on here. There are things that I feel on the great web of life that must be in alignment, okay? For instance, we could call it a meetup, you know, like meeting up meaning with someone. So if you're way over here on the great web of life and somebody else is over there on the other side of the great web of life, and they're just minding their own business and you're minding your own business, but it, according to the great plan or the possible of your participation in an experiment of meeting up with someone, where you must meet up with this person, you have to get going. You have to be alert to signs and signals, dreams, okay, guidance, information, or an urge or a sense of something, that you must make movement in order to meet up on that timeline, on that great web of life, to create and manifest some extraordinary relationship, okay? Some opportunity to learn, to teach, to grow, to be, right? So this is a way of life in regarding everything. You know, how sometimes you say, if you think about circumstances in life where people say, well, I happen to be driving on a journey and something told me to take a left or go down that road. I don't know what it was, but I just went down that road. And when you went down that road, something extraordinary occurred. It was crucial to your life. That's how the web of life is. So but we must pay attention to the guidance. So if that person said, I got this urge to turn left, but I know I'm late or I'm too busy and I gotta go this way, I don't have time, you missed that meetup moment that would be crucial for you in your life and for that other person. That's how I look at life, you see. So that's why I say there are no mistakes. There's only opportunities. When people are sitting in their life, in their comfort zone, for instance, they think they're comfortable, but it's a false sense of security. They are not comfortable. But they keep getting urges and feelings and callings and visions and dreams and whatever, but they're not moving on them because they're afraid that they will make a mistake. They're afraid to move because they've been told and trained that if you make a mistake, you have failed. Now, I don't believe in mistakes. I don't believe in failure. I believe in the opportunity of our life. Everything is an opportunity. In our lifetime, in the pathway of life, we are always met with two options, two pathways, two roadways, right?
Yeah.
And people will stand in the middle with one pathway on this side and one pathway on that side, and they're stuck in their comfort zone because they fear making a mistake. If I do this, it might be wrong. If I do that, it might be wrong. So they don't do anything. So they're stagnant. They're stale. Their presence on the great web of life is being stalled, right? And what they were meant to participate in and meet up with, and who knows what is going to happen, it will be an opportunity. And of course, it's up to them to look at this opportunity as either positive or negative. That's in our hands. You can say, my experience on that pathway was terrible. I never should have done that. Or you could say, wow, that experience was pretty challenging, but I learned something. I received something so extraordinary about myself and my experience. That's what life is about. But if you stay in your comfort zone, you're never going to fully live your life, and you're never going to spread your wings, and you're never going to be participating in the sacred journey that you are here upon the web of life. That's how I look at it.
Cool. Well, I just posted another link in the chat room of 38 different quotes that Henry Ford. He seemed to be a pretty amazing and, you know, down-to-earth kind of person. So.
Well, yeah, a lot of these people, you know, were, and that for sure, a lot of these successful people. Now, my teacher, Wallace Blackout, one of the things he constantly spoke about was doubt. He said that doubt is a disease. It's a sickness. Doubt. Okay, now doubt. You could say, if you have doubt, what are you doubting? You're doubting yourself, you're doubting creation, you're doubting life, you're doubting your significance, you're doubting all that could be very positive and beautiful and sacred. You are doubting all of that, and therefore you stay stuck within a different frequency, a different energy, and you exude that energy, and all those around you, associated with you, are receiving that. That's how we are seed planters. If you want to change the world or resolve these problems, which people are saying we're in big trouble, we have a big problem, and we're helpless and it's hopeless, and so on, that's where you're going to be. And that's what you're going to create. That's your seed that you are planting, that belief. Well, you are planting doubt.
On that list that I just mentioned, when you was talking about you didn't believe there's any mistakes, on number 35, you said the only real mistake is the one from which we learn nothing.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I think the only real mistake, too, is that we choose to stay stuck and not participate because we have chosen to believe that we have no power, that it's hopeless and we are helpless. And now that is a brainwashing and a training.
Well,
and so
Henry Ford started a business way back then that's still in existence today, so somebody must have learned something from his words of wisdom. What do you think?
Well, I think so. I do. We can learn if we choose to learn.
Yep.
There are many that have come before us who have had extraordinary difficulties and challenges in their lives, and they never gave up. I mean, challenges that you read about that you could say, "Wow, I don't know if I could handle that." But you know what? They did know. And they didn't say, I can't handle this, I doubt myself, or I doubt some omniscience or some extraordinary thing, or miracles. I believe in miracles because I've experienced miracles beyond imagining, And I know that they exist, and they exist for everyone. To me, a simple miracle is just me waking up every day and seeing the beauty all around me, this extraordinary creation, you know, and the miracle of life itself. And when you start looking into the scientific aspect of life creation, it's mind-blowing. You talk about miracles. You talk about the sacred geometry. You talk about the formation of life. You know, it's amazing. Amazing.
Yes,
so to me, that's a miracle, right? But I mean, I have had profound miracles on the level of extraordinary phenomenon. That's the other part.
Yeah, and that's, one thing I wish that everybody in this world could actually experience, because I feel like just the way you explain the world is kind of how I feel like it. It's amazing. When you go out there and you look at the world, it's mind-blowing, the complexity of it. It's just so incredibly beautiful and amazing, and all the ways that things work, and that the possibilities are endless of what we could actually do if we could figure out how to work together with everything we've been given. But people, they just seem to step over miracles, and they seem to not see when a miracle even occurs. I mean, I'm sure that everybody and his brother or sister out there have at some point in time had something incredibly amazing happen in their life that, did something wonderful for them or whatever, and they didn't see it. They didn't recognize it. And, you know, it's a shame, because if you ever experience that and you ever recognize what this miracle that we talk about is, your life won't be the same. You won't look at the world the same. Everything out there to me is amazing. I mean, I feel like I'm blessed every time I wake up in the morning and I get a whole fresh new day to either repeat the mistakes I made yesterday or make some really good choices and something good to happen for tomorrow or whatever. So I do believe in the dream. I do believe in possibilities, even as impossible as it may seem, and as overwhelming as the task is. Just what we've explained and experienced here today, as far as how many people we just delivered this message to. And I'm not saying my words of wisdom are any better than anybody else's. I'm just one of you, you know. I ain't no different than any one of you. I'm just one that recognizes that we're kind of straying away from our goal, like Henry Ford said, you know?
Well, I think that we might want to consider the significance of having no regrets. I'm going to read to you here 6 best things about making a mistake. Let's see what we come up with. Yes, they are our best teachers, for sure, like we just said. They mean action. Right?
Yep.
In other words, it's gonna push you to do something. Mistakes are proof that you are alive, that you are living. No mistakes. You are in your comfort zone, and not in a good way. If you say, I can't make a mistake. Nope. Just what I said before, you are in your comfort zone, and that's not really good. You're not fully participating in life. You're not moving so that an opportunity may come your way. You are just stuck. They make you smarter, okay? Basically, yes, they do. With a growth of a mindset, it's possessed by most high achievers. Mistakes are your biggest chance at getting better and smarter, okay? They are largely reversible. Mistakes are actually much less risky than you think, and we are not as vulnerable as we perceive ourselves to be. So, and this is very important. How do you perceive yourself? How do you know yourself? How have you been trained to believe whatever it is about yourself and your ability to be successful or just be joyous or experience inner peace? You know? So, an unsuccessful first attempt, for instance, okay, a bad purchase can often be returned for money or whatever. But when you think about the worst that can happen, it's often much less daunting than we imagine. And mistakes make you interesting, this person says. I guess you look at your life like a biography. Will it be interesting, daring, full enough, or will it play it safe, be boring? Right? So it's up to you, I guess, if you want to be the adventurer. I often use this term many years back when I would have this fear come over me, fear about movement or fear about participating in something, right? And I learned to use these words. I would say to myself, oh wait, we're going on an adventure. And suddenly this fear or this resistance would just move away. For some reason, the words, we are going on an adventure, shifted the negative fear about whatever might happen or the worst case scenario, right? So, number six is, mistakes create compassion. You know what? We all make mistakes, right? Mistakes reveal new insights, moments that success can never match. So it's really about letting ourselves off the hook, you know. Find out if you have been programmed to fear making a mistake. It's not a big deal. Just keep going. That's what Henry Ford is saying, basically. Just keep going. That's what the scientists say. Out of some mistakes came extraordinary, creations that we've seen, you know, over and over and over again. So mistakes are not a bad thing. We've just been told or programmed to believe that if you make a mistake, you are bad or you have failed. You're not going to come up to the standards that so-and-so has set for you. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Everyone will make. Life, you know, throws us challenges, and sometimes we make wrong choices, or let's say we make different choices, for an opportunity is waiting for us. It's not a wrong choice. I just believe in that.
Well, out there, depending on who you talk to, the top 10 of the biggest problems that people perceive in the world, and as I go down this list and I look at this list, it blows my mind. You know, I'm just going to read this list, even though, wait till you get to number one, you'll see your crazy hair Shaziz gets all riled up, and I bet you already know by that statement what the number one problem is. According to this particular BusinessInsider.com list, number 10, according to them and their survey, is lack of economic opportunity and employment. So everybody needs a job to be able to provide for their family, you know, to fit into this structure. But there's civilizations in the world that their people's only job was going out there and they were farming and bartering and trading, and they did just well back in the day. But now systems been a lot more complex and people have become more reliant on this particular system, and so most of them can't really fend for themselves unless they fall into a place where they can find some sort of task that they can do that somebody's willing to pay them for.
Yeah.
So the next one in line is number 9, safety and security and well-being, which, you know, if we're all going to live together in a society, safety and security is something that you should, you know, it should be like a given. We shouldn't have to worry about, you know, one of us being sick or whatever, somebody being hurting, you know, each other, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, that should be already a given in society, that we care and we protect one another.
Yeah.
Coming in at number 8 says lack of education. Education, it depends on how you look at education, because whether you're going to be telling the true history and teaching the true science and all that kind of stuff, it's all been, as far as I'm concerned, considering who is the one that's doing the teaching, who's the one that's writing the books and all that kind of stuff. You know, out here in the alternative media, we kind of show you everything that's out there, all the different things, and we have our own points of view on which ones are right or wrong or whatever. But as far as knowledge goes, Knowledge should be shared freely and fully, not just partial what you think somebody needs to know. You know, teach them all different types of alternative medicines, all types of different alternative, ways to grow foods and such. You know, that's the type of education that the world needs. Coming in at number seven, food and water security. Everybody needs to eat. That's a given. All right, and we should be able to ensure that everybody is able to eat because the resources available to us are quite literally overabundant. And if we ever was to be able to use them properly, all the resources that we got, there's no reason for people to not be able to eat. I mean, when I go to stores and I look and I see that, I see documentaries on how much food gets wasted, there should be some sort of talk about a way in order to ensure that nothing ever gets wasted, that everybody who needs something is going to be able to be provided for it. Now, I'm not talking like, even whether you want to talk about a communist society or a socialist society or whatever, where, everybody's equal and they're all treated the same. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about human decency, where we can teach people who need to be able to purify the water how to purify the water, and we can ensure that crops and everything is grown and nothing gets wasted and people can still earn a decent living and all that kind of stuff. It's just a common agreement between humans that we're going to take care of each other no matter what. And at number six, it says government accountability and transparency. Well, if you're going to have a government that's supposedly by the people, for the people, of the people, or whatever, where the people have the ultimate say, then the government needs to be held accountable and transparent. If they're not doing the job that they were selected to do or whatever, then they're not working for the people. And we all know the conspiracies of, our government ain't really our government. They're just puppets for the elite and the banking system. Well, it's up to us to change that if that's the case. And down the next one down is religious conflicts at number five, this one's a touchy one to me because I'm not discounting anybody's faith. I live by my own faith and by my own personal beliefs, but I don't force mine on anybody, and I don't want to fight with anybody over their beliefs, and I don't expect them to want to fight with me over mine. So religious, even the terminology religion, I like Barbara's spirituality words better than I like the whole religious, because when you get in to talk about religious or religion, you're talking about an organization, a governmental structure within, and things in any type of government can be infiltrated and misused and abused and take away from the positive that a certain religious or spiritual belief might have had to add to, such as the way that Jesus spoke about treating people, and honoring your mother and father. These concepts, they get kind of overshadowed by terrible things that may be going on in so-called religious institutions and such. So, it makes me have to explain my point of view on my spiritual belief when, I tell everybody I'm not even remotely religious. I'm not, involved in any religion. See, according to me, when Christ came down here, he didn't come down here to start a religion. He wasn't he wasn't even a Christian. He was the Christ, according to the way I feel. And so, he didn't come down here to start a religion. He just came down here to deliver a message.
That's true, but you know what? I'd like to remind everyone that there were other messengers that came. There were messengers that came through different millennia, times and millennia, to different cultures, and they brought the same message that what you're speaking about with Yeshua.
And I don't discount those either. That's,
but it's the same message, but I'm saying it has nothing to do about organized. To me, religion is organized. It's organized by man, okay?
That's why I hate that terminology.
And it has nothing to do with your sovereign spirit within you, with yourself as a sacred being. And your relationship to Creator that you came here with. It never left. It's ever present. It has been covered up and denied by organizers of religions. Okay, so this is why, you know, this is a serious thing when we speak about throughout history, the violence, murders, assaults, and whatever it is, land grabs over religion, you know, genocide, according to religions, man-made religion, okay? Yep. And the word of Yeshua, the word of the peacemaker, the word of the white buffalo calf woman, and Kankul Khan, and Viracocha, and the feathered serpent, they all brought the same message of living in harmony and balance and peace and love and compassion and to be stewards of the earth, you see. So when you talk about organized religion, that's what it is, organizing you.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I say I don't subscribe to, you know, that. I tried to add Patty in there. That might have been that disruption you heard there, Barbara.
No, I didn't hear any. I just saw her popping in. You know, but I wanted to just say I popped in into the chat. We were talking about mistakes, and I'd like to give people this information, nine brilliant inventions made by mistakes.
Let me finish out this list because we're at number four.
Okay.
All right, so at number four comes in poverty. And this is one that really, you know, I can really speak from because I actually was grown up in what basically over here would be called a, you know, a poor kind of family. I knew what it was like to go hungry. I knew what it was like to, you know, not know where your next food was coming from or, you know, even wearing hand-me-down clothes and all that kind of stuff. And so I got to live that kind of lifestyle, and even after, you know, I got older and things started working, I understood that I gained this this thankfulness or this respect for what I did have and being able to share with others and that kind of stuff, and I actually got to witness other families that maybe would be classified really poor families that had so much giveness in their heart, even though they had so little to give, according to if you would look at it as quantity wise, but nonetheless, what they had, they were willing to share with everybody. And I believe that heart that goes from where I'm at all the way down to the actual, you know, bottom of what people would classify society as, that big heart is universal from top to bottom. There are, you know, people out there that are, you know, capable of doing wonderful things just as much as there are people capable of doing terrible things. I believe it's an ultimate choice between everyone on how you use your heart or whether you do or you don't. But poverty to me, you know, I believe that poverty is a deal that could actually solve itself when we resolve a few issues and basically giving somebody a chance to a higher level of a lifestyle or something. Just for example, you know, fresh water or electricity and you know, the modern day conveniences and stuff, and being able to, like I'm watching these two in this picture of this one on this list here of poverty. It's got a couple little children that are standing playing in a dump, and there's actually a pig in this dump too, a live pig. But I'm looking at behind these kids and I'm seeing resources that pretty much a lot of poor people would rely on, you know, go gather up some aluminum and some different types of materials that they could recycle for a few pennies or whatever. But I'm seeing it on a better scale. I'm seeing that if a person and a group of individuals wanted to go in there, they could actually turn that dump into a treasure of resources that could be, you know, recycled, reused, and engineered to actually help them to not only clean that area up, but make their life better by teaching them, you know, a little bit about science and, you know, things like that that could, you know, make their community, you know, better. You could turn this dump into a garden, quite literally, a fuel source and all that, but you know, that all goes in the whole education thing. And so moving on down the line down here, number three is inequality, income discrimination, you know, where people think that some portions of society don't get paid as much as other, you know, people, and maybe that's true, but that to me, I don't see how it makes it all the way up there to top three about, you know, people making money and stuff. I think they got this list kind of backwards. But either way, number two, which is probably where it needs to be. Well, probably I would put this next one at number one if it's me personally. Large scale conflicts slash wars. There's no reason for all these wars, because if you actually look, if you get down to the brass tacks of what wars are all about, one is that it is about people fighting for, you know, money, resources, or over some sort of perceived religion ideology. That's it in a nutshell. The three most ridiculous things to fight over in this world are the reasons why we have large-scale conflicts and wars, in my opinion. And last but not least, it coming in at number one is climate change and destruction of nature. Man. This is me, in my view.
That's a whole show in itself.
Yeah, this is my view. I don't even want to get into, because while I do believe we should protect it and work in harmony with our environment, the science of the ridiculousness of how this came into number one will it's beyond me. Because taking care of one another and feeding one another and the basic needs of life is number one to me. And one of the basic needs of life is to not have bombs and bullets flying at you. So, you know, that also includes war. So, with that said, I'm going to let you have this back there, Patty, so that you can talk about what you...
Barbara, it's Barbara.
Barbara, sorry.
I just want to point this one piece out, and then, yeah, let's bring Patty in. So, we were talking about mistakes, that there are no such thing as mistakes. There's only opportunity. Do you know that penicillin... came about through a mistake, okay? But this one is interesting. Do you all remember the Slinky?
Yeah, I remember that. That's a fun toy, but it could be dangerous.
Well, listen, how this came about. Okay, in 1943, okay, this naval engineer, Richard James, he was developing a sensitive spring that were meant to keep fragile equipment steady on ships. What he did was, by mistake, he knocked one of his new springs from a shelf and, like a kid on Christmas morning, watched it do that famous slinky walk down instead of just hitting the ground. It's one of, by the way, it became one of the all-time greatest toys. He took this creation home to his wife, who saw the potential of a toy. But what happened was, it's not all that the Slinky became. The Slinky was found other uses, including as an antenna by soldiers in Vietnam and as a therapy tool. So I'm just saying, there's a whole list here. I popped this into the chat because I wanted to emphasize that out of mistakes come extraordinary things, and we should look at life like that. So that's all I wanted to say on that. So... are you there? Oh. Hello? I can't believe this.
Yes, you can.
Hey, sis. I don't know what's happening.
He needs to step away for a minute, it says.
He needs to step away for a minute. Oh, okay. So welcome. Welcome,
hey,
Patty.
Sis.
I guess it's you and me. You and me, the sisters.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in mistakes either. I believe in lessons, you know, the opportunity to learn, which is always, to me, a benefit. And every time that we have what is termed mistakes, we always come out with either learning from that miscalculation, or either deciding, well, I'm going to try it again and see if it works this time, you know.
Yeah.
We live in a world, we're born into this world that is just amazing. I mean, and if you've never asked yourself what could go wrong, nature's going to teach you exactly how little control you have over everything around you. The only thing you really have control of is you and how you move through That's the one thing about being born in the swamp, or raised in the swamp. I wasn't born in the swamp. I was born in a hospital. But being raised in the swamps and stuff.
But the
thing that is waking up, you know, in the morning and walking out and being confronted by every manner of wild thing that lived in the swamp. Nothing was out of place. Nothing was amiss. Yet things were living and dying constantly. And it's okay. It's okay to accept the fact that maybe you're not going to get it. Maybe what you're trying to do isn't going to work out, but that's okay because it's going to lead you to something else. It's going to give you some information, some ability within yourself to take it a little bit further and maybe in a different direction. Like you were saying, the invention for the Slinky, it was never intended to be a toy. That wasn't the purpose of designing it, of creating it. It had another reason to be built. But it didn't work. It didn't work for that. But it did find its place, didn't it? So even though we make what we term as mistakes, it doesn't mean they're mistakes. It means that they are learning steps. They're just lessons taking us further down the road to where we need to be, you know? It's okay. Yeah, mudbug, Stephen. Mudbug. They used to call me that because I like to play in the ditches with the crawfish.
Well, I think this whole thing about mistakes, I think that parents have an issue with, you know, bringing up their children and not allowing them to make mistakes, you know. Simple mistakes, little mistakes, right? I'm not talking about dangerous things. I'm talking about, right?
Well, you know, when I was in the swamp, you know, there were other people that lived there, and some of them had cattle and stuff like that. You go picking blackberries. Blackberries grow along barbed wire fences. You know, you learn through your mistake that there's a way to go through a barbed wire fence and there's a way not to, you know? If you don't learn it the first time, it's going to teach you the second time or maybe the third time, you know? It's just life. I think we take life a little bit too seriously sometimes, you know? We think that if I don't get this done, if I don't do this, if I don't become this, if I don't become that, and we put all of these terms, all of these shackles on us that we rarely ever can live up to. I mean, what are we trying to live up to? Can't we just be? What if we just lived our life and took life as it came and just stayed in the wonder of life? Just kept looking for the magic of life. You know, invention. They say, what is it, Stephen probably knows, necessity.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
There you go. So necessity is the mother of invention. You know, that's why we're here, where we're at, because of necessity. Because we wanted a way to be able to stay warm in the winter, and we wanted a way to be able to be sheltered from the storms. We wanted a way to be able to get from point A to point B without having to take 3 or 4 days or to be out in the elements. We created clothing. We created all these things. We created agriculture. Everything was created out of the necessity to do something a little bit better, more efficient, to provide us a little bit more comfort, you know. So necessity takes care of itself, right? When we need to improve our lives, we seek out, we begin to find ways to improve our lives. I think we take life too seriously. I think we just need to sit back every once in a while and look at life without all of those requirements, without all of those restrictions as to where we should be, you know?
I got
something here that I want to read. And I think you know what it is.
Okay.
This is the next installment on Shaziz's writings of his friend Goliath. And I didn't get to read it last week, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read this other. Yeah, for anyone who hasn't been on Facebook and checked out these writings that Shaziz has, this is extraordinary. It really is extraordinary writing here, of a life lesson, let's say. So if you haven't, you need to maybe take a ride over there to Facebook, and check it out. And if you want, I can send you the whole thing because I kept it all. I've got it all. But, you know, it's worth reading. It's inspiring. And that's why I want to read it today. And every time, you know, it seems like there's always, this is always going to be right along with what everybody's talking about. But maybe it's because this is what we're always talking about. I don't know. But anyway. This is my friend Goliath, and this is the third chapter, maybe the fourth chapter, but here we go. And this one's called, did I go one too far? Let me get back here. No. Okay. I want to make sure I'm not going to repeat. Okay. Alright, here we go. Goliath and the boat. We all make choices in our lives that affect us personally, but sometimes other people make choices that affect our lives as well. Years ago, a man made a choice out of anger that in an instant turned my world upside down. A choice that changed my reality in ways that I cannot explain. Unless you have lived it, the next best thing is the words that I speak if you have ears to listen. I had been working every day on the pond to bring it back to life. Sometimes I neglected other things that may have been more important to some, but in my mind, because of a choice made by someone else, I have absolutely no concept of time. Time for me that day stopped forever. All that exists is the here and now. Chris found me a boat that I could use to work on the pond, but before I continue, I have to tell you about the frog. I was sitting there on the bucket after feeding Goliath when suddenly I began hearing what sounded like a cry for help. I know by now I'm sounding crazier by the second, but I heard it. Help! 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 So I ran around the pond to see what was going on. I could hear the sound coming from a bush. When I went up to the bush and pushed the leaves aside, I saw what first appeared to be a mouse, but ended up being a frog laying on his back. The frog flipped over and hopped off into the pond. Just then, a huge black snake slithered off quickly from around the bushes. I realized I had just saved that frog from impending doom. The next day, I was sitting on a bucket, cleaning the pond, waiting for Goliath to come around to say hello, but he never showed. I was skimming the pond. This frog swam up, turned around, and sat facing the pond between my feet. Every move I made was cautious not to scare this frog away. Frog sat there as if knowing that as long as I was there, this frog knew it would be safe. I thought to myself, could this be that frog that I saved the day before? Seems word in the pond must have traveled, because other frogs came as if they had absolutely no fear. I spoke to the frog and called him or her, whatever the case may be, Froggy, and I said, you're safe as long as I'm around. That old sneaky snake won't get you. Tired of waiting for Goliath to show up, I jumped into the boat and paddled out into the pond to seek him out and search for goldfish as well. I spotted Goliath, and he spotted the boat. Goliath did not like the boat, and I had crossed the line of his trust. After all, it was his home being invaded by me in this big metal boat. Trust took a while to earn with Goliath, and with one simple boat ride, our two worlds began to slip apart. When dealing with nature, one must move slowly, as to show no harm and only good intent. The world that we humans travel in can be very scary to us. So imagine the mind of a turtle with his new but strange friend. From that point on, I walked and spoke softly as I interacted with nature and all there within. Animals of nature can learn your heart, and those who know say they are people too. Goliath was not in the least impressed by that boat, but as time passed, he seemed to understand that the boat was nothing more than a tool for the man. Soon he would follow the boat as I would talk to him and throw him food, rarely poking his head above the water unless the boat was far away. But I could see his bubbles behind me as I paddled away. I knew he was there. Trust can be a very fragile thing while traveling through life. I know this for a fact, because years ago someone shattered mine. And knowing how it feels, I have sworn to never do that to another living soul as long as it is within my power not to do so. Many roads traveled, many dreams, incomplete yet. I know that my destiny begins at the bottom of my own 2 feet. I had to decide whether to allow the ghost of years gone past dominion over me. Did my life belong to them, or did my life belong to me? Some would say, and you got all this from spending time with a turtle? Why? And a great big smile to them would be on my reply. And that's the end of that installment. Thank you so much, Jesus.
Thank you. Amazing.
I continue. I read the whole story too, which I was so grateful you sent to me, and hearing you read it again, Patty, is it's a beautiful thing. And I'm seeing more in the story every time it's read, and more things and beautiful teachings. And I learned, because we have 103 acres here, and we learned a hard way. It came to me, I realized how we affect the creatures and nature unintentionally, but that we must learn to be more and more connected and vigilant about our steps on the earth and the things that we do that we just take as natural to do, but it's not natural in the world of the creatures. And there have been many things that have occurred that were deeply sad and really hard. I mean, to the point where I was just devastated at things that were done unintentionally, you know, and we're still learning, but I realized how here we are in this land, as you, Shaziz, on your land, trying to figure out how to be on the land, do what you need to do to be fruitful on the land, but also to be careful and aware and gentle at the same time. Just talking about the metal boat, you know, how that was not so pleasing to Goliath. But there are intrusive things that we do out of necessity, we think, and we don't take steps to be aware or conscious of what we are and how it might affect a little critter in the weeds or the big grasses that we're cutting or a tree that we think we must take down. And then I was thinking about the greater world, about how things are happening in the world, like through industries, you know, through coal mining, taking down whole mountains, for instance, or exploding the earth to dig a hole for resources, and the effect it has upon not only the Mother Earth, a living entity, I feel, but the creatures that live there, little, even little tiny things that we don't see or even imagine that are there. So, you know, it's an amazing lessons and a beautiful story. And I hope that people will pass your story on to someone else. Like we're talking about the 6 degrees of separation and how that story is so touching and so beautiful that I hope many, many more people receive, you know, something from your words and your heart. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Like you said, every time I hear it, I still get something else from it, you know. It's amazing that we don't realize that our actions in life not only affect things, you know, in nature, but it affects the way that we treat each other and the way that we respond to each other. Every single thing you do and say makes a difference as far as I'm concerned, and I got all that from a turtle. It says, I know it sounds crazy some, because, you know, you haven't experienced, but, you know, when you actually make that connection, it's going to be a life-changing experience from you, and you can make that connection. All you got to do is just be open-minded and just let wherever this information's coming from, just listen. You know, you can't receive a message if you're not willing to hear. If you're not willing to listen, and you know, it's just words to you. But let those words sink in, and you know, that just the fact that I took that metal boat out into this turtle's home, to me it was just a boat ride. To him it was something, you know, new and probably scary or whatever, you know. It was disruptive. And
well,
I didn't see that until.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you were gifted to see that. That's how I look at it. It's because other people could definitely do things, and they're not conscious. They're not connected and aware in relationship to nature. And, you know, I learned many, many years ago that originally the animals were our teachers. That's how Creator set it up, helping us and the people and guiding the people how to live on the earth in harmony and to be aware and to be in relationship, conscientious and conscious relationship. And that we have distanced ourselves from that connectedness and relationship because, you know, for instance, the sacred the secret life of trees, or secret life of plants, rather. If you Google that, it tells you the awareness, sensitivity, and awareness, and alertness, and conscientiousness of plants. And scientific studies have been done to prove that. But yet the Indian people, the nation's peoples, knew that. They had relationships, and they learned and were taught by the creatures and all of nature how to live. Yes, they took plants, but they communicated with what we call the chief of the plant, for instance, a medicine. So they would approach that chief, and they were told which one was the chief because they were listening and paying attention, right? They had that relationship. And they would make an offering to that plant, the chief, and ask for permission to take some of the medicines, not all of it, some. And they offered that little, sacred tobacco to do that. And this is the way the people learned how to live in harmony and balance with all of nature, through the teachings of the plant people, the tree people, the creepers, and the four-legged, winged, turtle people, everything. You know, that's the way the original people lived, in that Creator's Law of One, Mithakwiyeyo Yasin, we are all related, therefore we treat our relatives with respect and kindness and compassion. Doesn't mean that you don't fish, It doesn't mean that you don't hunt for what you need, but you do it with respect and an awareness, and you make an offering in the prayer, and that is the way of being in harmony, I'm just going to say.
Well, I think there's a whole lot to be learned just by listening. It's amazing. You know, I wrote that story, and so you'd think I'd know it inside and out, but like you said, every time I hear it, it's a new message to me and myself. It's a reminder, you know, on how I treat people and how, you know, I build trust with not just the people that are around me, but in nature itself. I'm amazed if I go out there on this property and I'm walking around, I can stand there within feet of a rabbit, and this rabbit's not afraid of me. It knows my heart somehow, some way. It knows that I'm not there to cause any harm. And the same thing with deer. I told a story about, I believe, a week ago about I was sitting down there at the pond feeding the turtles, and right across from me was a baby deer that come walking up and just made a little bed down there in the grass right across the pond from me, and it saw me. At first I almost thought I was invisible, because, you know, why would a deer see a human and not take off? But no, that deer sat down, laid down there, and started eating, you know, grass and stuff, and I even at one point started waving at it so I'd know that it saw me. So I know without a doubt the deer saw me, but wasn't afraid of me. And that's amazing. To me, it's like, it's a miracle in itself, because when you see wildlife, birds, any kind of animals, and the moment you walk up there, they all scatter like they're in fear for their life, you know. I know that I'm not going to want to hurt them, but do they know from experience, from their prior times, interactions with humans, that humans aren't safe? You know, we get to the point in society where we won't even pick up an individual whose car may have broke down, a hitchhiker, because we're afraid that hitchhiker might try to cause us harm, because we've told each other to be fearful of one another. We've told each other to recognize differences, and, you know, whether it be financial differences, you know, you don't want some poor people taking your money or robbing you or whatever, you know, because desperate times call for desperate measures, is what some people would say. But I don't see that when I see people. If I see people in need, I see something completely different. I see myself and how I would want somebody to react to me if I was hungry, you know. I seen a video one time that affected me profoundly, because in this video there were children going around picking scraps up off of the dirt that people had dropped while they were having meals. And what disturbed me the most about it was these were adults that were having meals. These were grown people that were having meals while they were children. Not their children, you know, maybe other people's children. But they were having a meal while all these children were running around hoping that something would fall on the dirt so that they could eat it. And I cried so deeply inside, I couldn't believe that. Because if I could explain to you how, when I was raised and my respect for food and that people need nourishment, and I could tell you story after story about how I know from personal experience what it feels like to go hungry, and that I swore that I would never, you know, that would be, if there's one way to make me really angry, it's take food from anybody. That makes me really angry. But when I saw this video and the fact that there were adults that were, you know, feeding themselves and feeding their needs, which I wouldn't want to deny anybody food, but there were children picking scraps up off the ground just to survive. It put a dent in my soul.
Yeah, I could feel that, of course. And the way that I learned in our tradition is that the children get fed first, and then the elders get fed.
And that's the way it should have been, you know?
Yep.
How these people could actually sit there and enjoy a meal while there were, you know, little children. I mean, you know, 5, 6
yep.
years old, not having, I would have, what I would have done, and, you know, it's easy to say what I would have done, and you're not there, but what I would have done is I would have got up and picked one of those children up and put him in my spot. That's what I would have done because of the way that I was raised and the way that my heart works. You know, and I would think, you know, that other people would have done the same thing. That's my perception of what would have been right in the world.
Well, do you know, when I was a child and we had gatherings and we had elders, each child was, like I was closest to my grandmother, so I was her designated child, so to speak. Not verbally, no one told me this is who you must, you know, make sure is okay. I naturally gravitated, and my brothers and my cousins and everyone had their specifics. And what we would do whenever it was time, you know, when the crawfish was boiled and put on the table and everybody was joined, I went and got my grandmother. I brought her to the table and I sat next to her. She taught me as a child how to eat a crawfish. She taught me as a child how to pick out the corn and the potatoes and things and the garlic and things like this and how to eat these things. I made sure that she had her food, and as she got older, I peeled her crawfish for her. I gave her her potatoes. I gave her her corn. It's a giving of each other, a learning, and then returning that gratitude by doing what you were taught to do. You know, she gave to me as a child, and as an older child, and her as an elder, I gave back to her. This is the way that we teach our children to have empathy. This is the way that we teach our children to have respect. This is the way that we teach our children to understand that we each need each other and that each one of us has something to teach and something to learn. You know, I grew up I've talked about it before. My family was not perfect. They were partiers. They liked to drink, you know. But the one thing that was always uppermost is the respect for each other as living beings. The willingness to learn from each other. This is what is missing today, that nobody wants to learn from somebody else. You know, we all want to show the way. And I'm just as bad. You know, I'm just as guilty as anybody. I want to show people my way. I want to show people what I think. I want people to, because I think I, you know, and I'm being totally candid here. I get in these places where I think, well, I've got the answers. And I don't have the answers. Everything that was passed to me from my grandmother, I can validate within myself. And when I deal with my grandchildren today, I see that my grandchildren, they want to learn, but they're not being taught the right things. I can't take them out and show them how nature works because they're afraid of nature. I can't take them and show them, you know, this is the way that we do this. This is the way that we... Now, I can take them out in the garden, and that's one thing. But our children are growing up without that connection to elder, without that connection of reciprocal respect and teachings and learnings about returning the gratitude, right? And that's I think what the whole thing is today. We're so full of trying to make sure that we know all the dangers in the world that we've forgotten about all the beauty those teachings about all of the respect, you know?
To me, what you're talking about is the sacred hoop. It's the keeping the sacred ways together and passing them through generations, through the children. Mm-hmm. How we live and respect each other, how we take care of each other, how we treat each other. You know, the children learn from the elders and take care of the elders. The elders take care of the children. You know, and that's the sacred hoop to me. That's what that's about.
I've always liked that because a person, they'll start off as a baby, and quite literally by the time their life is over, the majority of all of them end up the same way. You know, you get old and you can't move around as like you could when you was younger, and you actually need somebody to care for you. And I think that for all the good deeds that all my grandparents and my mom and, you know, people that had took care for me and basically paved the road that, you know, I walked on to get where I'm at. You know, not always some of the, you know, people before me did a good job as far as trying to guide me in the right direction. But I'm saying for the most part to finally be the man that I am today, that there were people that were responsible for making it so that I would be able to have the opportunities that I got, you know, between the farmers out there that grew the food and the veterans that, went to protect freedoms and the moms and the grandmas and grandpas and aunts that looked after you and took care of you, feed you, you know, taught you differences between right and wrong, those kind of people. But the fact that most communities here in the United States, you'll see it's a sad deal where the elderly will be put into, you know, old folks' homes is what they call them, I guess, retirement homes. And a lot of times the children won't even go and see these people. And it's sad to me because if I look back in other communities like Native American communities, they take care of one another from the time that they're born until the time that they pass on. And to me, that's the way families do things. They take care of each other through thick and thin. And to see that anybody would end their life alone, you know, in that type of scenario, that's really sad. And I don't think it needs to be. You know, I honestly believe that at some point in life that we all got to come to a realization to bring, even with all this technology we've got, to bring our spiritual journeys, our lives down to a more simpler way of life, if you understand what I'm trying to say. It's just that, you know, I respect and I appreciate and I feel blessed for everybody who came before me who did something good to give me the opportunity to sit right here right now with these two wonderful ladies and be able to say these words of wisdom to you of things that I have learned throughout this journey in my lifetime. I don't have all the answers, just like none of us do. But the things that I've seen and, you know, the wisdom that I've gathered on the way, to me, it, you know, it belongs to the world, and I want to share this. I want to share my miracles with you and my testimonies of life and all the good ideas that I think I got. And, you know, together we put this on the table so that if anybody else, you know, has a question on their journey, there's an answer for them. I hope that kind of makes sense to you guys. What do you think, ladies?
Well, I think that it's a beautiful and privileged opportunity for me to be able to share some of my own experiences and, you know, insights and wisdoms and... you know, and I always say that I hope that something I've shared has touched someone's heart, spirit, and uplifted them, or given them something, you know, to contemplate or learn. You know, that's what we do, and so I think it's a beautiful thing. I think that's what we're all teachers for each other. You know, I think that there's such a distancing from this, the way of the original people, about what we were talking about, how we help each other, and there is sort of like this silent code. Like Patty said, you know, she wasn't told by anyone particularly, this is what you're supposed to do with that, with your grandma over there, and you're in charge of her, or you help her. This was just instinct, instinctual. But it comes from seeing, it comes from observation of your people. You know, we learn that way too. And that's one of the most beautiful things about the way of the original people, is there wasn't a lot of talking in that way, or let's say there wasn't a book or pages that you started reading from, that when there's an elder, this is what you are to do. You learned this by watching your parents or your aunties or your uncles about how to be around an elder, how to treat the elders, how to be aware of maybe their needs. You know, do they need a shawl? Is it getting chilly at night? So you take care of that, you know. Is anybody helping them? Do they have tea? Do they have coffee? This is the way, you know, I learned this, not by a book. I learned this from my own personal instinct, but also my connectedness to the earth, my love of the earth and my love of the way, or you say just our people. And, you know, I was at a gathering in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. It was a gathering of indigenous nations. And there were people from all over the world, Africa, South America, and so on, many, many nations. And they had set teepees up along the Mall there in Washington, D.C., and really thousands of people were there. And I noticed this, these two young people came walking in with an elder. They were beautifully dressed in their African ceremonial gear and their way of their tradition. And they sat him down in a chair, and people were everywhere, walking and sitting and talking and so on. So there were lots and lots of people around. And so they walked off and they left this elder there. I can't even tell you how old he was. He was very old. He could hardly walk, but he had his beautiful ceremonial attire in of his tradition. And there was the call out for the food, and the food tent was now open, and people started rushing over, you know, to get food, and people had been waiting and so on. And I sat there waiting because the line was very long, and I just watched this elder. He just sat there all by himself and sat there and sat there and sat there. And finally, I got up and I went to the food tent and I got two plates, one for myself and one for him. And I went over, I walked over, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe they'd be back by now, those young people, and help him, but no. He was just sitting there. And I brought him a plate of food, you know, and my heart just felt so, I was really felt so sad for him. I don't know why those young people, it seemed to me the young people were there to be his helpers or caretakers, I don't know, or they were his children or just sent there with him, I have no idea. But he sat there for so long and people were coming back with their plates filled with food and sitting around him and walking around him, and I just had to do that. I felt just so right to myself, you know, to do this. And then I just handed him the plate and walked away, you know. I wasn't doing it to get accolades or nothing. It was just the right thing to do. So I'm just saying that today I see, you know, I was at a family reunion yesterday. My aunt had just turned 100, and we were there to celebrate her life. And when the food was ready, everybody, all these young people got up to the table. I mean, young, like 25, 30, 21, 19, 18, and various other people. But I saw all these younger people way ahead in the line, and little children and elders, you know, way in the back of the line. And I thought to myself, this is so not right. You know, this is something's something doesn't feel right to me, because I'm following the tradition of Lakota people and the indigenous way, and these people are not. Okay, they're my relatives, but they're not following that way. So I'm just saying that I think that we are missing this connectedness, like you're saying. We put our elders away. We put them away. And it's a lonely place. It's a very lonely place. My mom was put in a home by my older brother, because he had, I guess you'd say, the right to do that, because he was the oldest. And I was adamantly against that. I wanted to take her to come to live with me, but he didn't like that idea. And I would go visit her. And I have to say, you know, going to one of those homes where the mothers, fathers, grandmas, grandpas just sit around all day long, and there's a TV blaring with all kinds of, you know, the wacky doodle stuff that's on TV. They're in a room sitting in their chairs. You go in there, and it's heartbreaking. When I went to visit my mom, it was heartbreaking. I brought a bunch of flowers for her one day, and I stood in the doorway to try to look for her in the room, and there was one of the grandmas was sitting in a chair near the door, and she looked at me, and her face lit up. And she got all excited and bright. She said, oh, are those flowers for me? Thank you so much. You know, and I gave her some of the flowers. I said, well, these are for my mom, but I'd love to share them with you. And I handed her some of the flowers, but I tell you, I was really beside myself. And I thought, wow, this is no way to end your years. You know, no way.
I often wonder, when I was listening to you tell your story there, I often wonder what the elderly people think when they're sitting around watching modern day TV, and actually how the world has changed so drastically from their generation to the next, you know, because every generation thinks that the next generation in line is more rowdy, and they might be right, you know, because I've seen things change, you know, from what I was raised to, and how we used to respect each other, and we'd open doors for ladies, and you know, and help people cross the road and that kind of stuff, you know. There seemed to be a lot more, you know, one-on-one respect for people in those days than you actually see now.
Yeah. You know, Shaziz, I'm thinking, you know, I'm 74. And, you know, some things are getting difficult for me physically and stuff like that. But I don't feel 74. I feel like a young person. You know, yeah. And I'm thinking of these elders sitting in those homes, wasting away, waiting. They're literally waiting to die. They're there for months, sometimes for a few years. They're waiting to die, and some of them nobody ever visits them, or they're not even, their lives ended, but they're not dead.
Yeah.
You know?
That's sad.
And it's heartbreaking, you know, and I'm thinking of, so in our way of the indigenous nations, you know, the grandmas and grandpas were so, so crucial and insignificant for the coming generations. They were the ones who carried the wisdom and the knowledge, whether it was about just, you know, a plant medicines or health or how to, you know, live on the earth or just to be in peacefulness or harmony. They were the teachers.
Well, that's
meant
to me is an untapped resource, because they've lived through it. They know the history, and there's things that they've experienced in their life which they could pass on to people if the people would just take the time to sit down and talk with their elders. You'd be surprised at what they would say.
Well, yeah, and then you have, you know, there are many people, and we were talking yesterday at the reunion about how some of my cousins were saying, oh, you know, I should have written this down, what my mother was telling me or my father was telling me. I should have recorded them. I wish I had recorded them. I wish I had sat with them more. Now that knowledge or whatever it is about their life, or which is part of my life, is gone, you know, and I wish I had talked to them more. I wish I had written this down. I wish I had recorded them. I wish I had asked my mother this question, because now it's gone. And that's because people are too busy, you know, way too busy, and they don't feel that it's important. When you get to be a certain age and your parents are gone and your grandparents are gone, you may really start to think about, gee, what happened to them when they came over here, you know, what was their life like, or who was Uncle So-and-so, because I'm looking at this, whatever this writing, there's just something about Uncle whomever. I don't even know I had an uncle. I'm just saying, it's gone. It's going to be gone. But the wisdoms of your people, the stories of your people, that's your story too. But if you don't listen, if you don't sit, if you don't reach out and seek that, there's going to be something missing, I feel really strongly. There's something, a piece of you is missing. That's how I look at it.
You know, there's a list of just about everything out there you can think about. There's a list of it. There's a list of top tens. And I'm sitting here talking about fix the world. And there's a big old long list of, I'm not going to sit here and read them all or anything like that, but there's a whole lot of people with a whole lot of good ideas on how we can fix this world. Some people might even think, well, the world's not broke, it's just chaotic, you know, and there ain't no way, no hope, or whatever. But I started this show off and I talked about, how fixing, the actual word was fixing the impossible. When you look out there and all the problems and all the arguments and frustrations that everybody's got, how do you resolve the world's problems with something as simple as a few kind words or whatever? And there's a lot of people out there that think there's no way that you can ever turn this around. That it's already written in stone, that doom and gloom is where we're headed, and that's that. That's all you get. No way to fix it. But for all the inspiring words that were told to me, whether Jesus was just one of many messengers out there, the words that he spoke that said things like that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move mountains. You know, that resonated somehow or another into what Henry Ford said. If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And all these words of wisdom that you hear out there are coming from people. They're coming from people that somehow or another got a message from somewhere in the world that says, you know, hey, all ain't lost. And that if you really want to fix it, then you'll get up and you'll fix it. Each of you.
Yeah. You know, when we started talking and I was saying you played those two audios and I said what was missing was the spiritual part, the spiritual key, you know. And now I'm thinking here, how can we fix this world if we continually put our elders away in homes? How can we fix this world if we mistreat the children, right? I think that's a first step, a priority. Yes, we need clean energy. Yes, we need all these things, many things. But I'm thinking these might be priorities here. We're very askew here. The whole system of our families, our children, our elders, is really gone awry. And I think this is suffering because the ones in the middle are suffering due to that. Everyone's suffering, the children, the elders, and the ones in the middle.
Yeah.
So how can we fix the world with this issue in our face, with the mistreatment and violations and disregard for children and our elders, you know?
Well, I think that when we realize that our children are our future and our elderlies are our history, there are two really important things in that mindset. You know, there's a phrase out there that if you ignore history, you're doomed to repeat it. And a lot of the, I would say all of the elders, every single last one of them, have lived through so many different types of experiences, both good and bad, and have a vast wealth of knowledge to share.
But well, personally and collectively.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so yes, you're right. Yeah.
And if you actually take the time to sit down and listen, see that it's easy to be a good speaker to some extent. Not always easy to find and put the right words in the right order so as not to offend somebody or to get the message across without a lot of times whenever people listen, they don't listen. If that makes any sense, when you start off with a phrase and they will find something in that phrase before you actually get your entire message out, they're already taking it down a different road to where it wasn't meant to be, what you were trying to say. And so when you become a good listener and you listen to the words that they're saying, and if you absorb these words and you understand the meanings of them or understand them, like Barbara's always saying, then it puts a different perspective on what this person's trying to say to you. We don't spend enough time communicating with each other and allowing each other to have our say. Everybody in this world wants to be heard, and it's hard to listen to them all speak at once. That's why I told you a long time ago, Barbara, that whenever you guys had your round table and you passed the talking stick around, that to me was an amazing thing, because it showed honor and respect for that everybody's words mattered. Everybody's message was important. And to treat each other like that is, to me, the answer. It is the solution, to actually pay attention when people speak, to listen to what they have to say, to at least hear them out. That's why we keep inviting people to come here to the Knights of the Round Table, because we want to hear what you got to say. We want to hear about your stories, your testimonies of life, your miracles that you've witnessed. We want to hear about the solutions that you found, your research, everything. Excuse me. It's all important. So when it comes to the elderly and the way that modern society seems to want to push them off to the side, out of sight, out of mind, I know there's certain times in people's life when they get to the point where their mind isn't there anymore, and that's sad. But even in those times, to leave them alone and not to give them the comforts that you would a newborn baby, and treat them and allow them to go on into the next world or life with dignity and respect for all that they've accomplished and the life that they led. When you said the words earlier, Barbara, about honoring, or maybe Patty said, I can't remember which one he said, both of you said it at one time or another, that you honored somebody's life. That, to me, that's a big deal. Because I believe that every life is important. I believe that every story out there is important. I can't drive down the road and look off at an old abandoned house out there without thinking about the family that shared their lives together in there and the stories that could be told.
When I went to, when I was invited to go to Easter Island, 2005, to go there to pray with the Chinapawakan, with the people, with the women especially, because there was a lot of domestic violence there on the island due to alcoholism. That's always seems to be introduced deliberately into Indian nations. And, there were like 4 liquor stores on that little island and 1 grocery store. So I went there and I met this elder. I was taken to meet this elder, and he said to me during our conversation, I was happy to meet an elder. I was like, this is what I wanted. I want to talk to this elder. I want to know some of the things that he could share with me, because I knew this is crucial, that he carried the wisdom, and he had the wisdom of his people and other important things to share. So I was happy to, I asked to meet an elder. I asked deliberately that I wanted to speak to some elders, right? And we had the grandmothers come too. It was beautiful to be with the elder, the grandmothers. But this elder said to me, I have so much to share and none of the young people are coming. And he said, I know I'm going to leave this earth with the wisdom, and nobody will carry it forward. I mean, that was heartbreaking, and I think the year after I left, months later, he did cross over, and I felt so sad, because I thought, here are his own people, the young people. He said they're not interested in coming to sit with, or learning the ways, or learning how to use the bark of the trees for medicine, or learn how to even make, you know, an item to wear out of the bark of the trees, because that's what these people did. And many other things, medicines, just the wisdom that an elder could give a person, a young person, to help them in their life and their struggles in life. And that goes on. Our elders are leaving. The ones who carry the wisdom that can help us in the future times. And if the young people don't go to them, this will not be carried through the generations. That will be lost. That wisdom will be lost. And this is a sad thing, because, you know, I'm always happy. I always want to seek out an elders, you know, and sit with them. Ask, you just let them talk and share with you, you know. Just listen. Be with them, you know. They have an enormous amount of stories, wisdom, experiences. If it just takes one little experience or one little story that could give you something that would change your life, it would be well worth it.
If you want to see an elder's eyes light up, all you have to do is approach them and ask them, can you tell me a story? I've done it so many times, and I have received such a bounty of knowledge and wisdom just by simply asking, please, do you have a story? You know,
that's amazing, because I have this thought that, I'll just say this phrase, one book written by many authors. If you take all these stories, and if you take all of life in itself, life is, the book of life itself is a story written by many authors. Each and every one of us out here would be an author of our own life, essentially, and our stories and trials and tribulations. And could you imagine a book written with all the elders' stories in there? What do you think?
Well, I have a book that I have read from. It's called Touch the Earth, and it revolves around the people in the 1800s that someone started to write down the wisdoms, the stories, the tellings, the experiences of the elders of different nations here on Turtle Island. I mean, of course, it's a beautiful book, but it doesn't cover all of the elders, because, you know, that's a monumental undertaking.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing, it's a book that you sit there and you laugh and you cry with.
There's another book also called Seven Arrows.
Oh, yes, I read that too. I forgot about that. Yeah. Well, we're just talking about Turtle Island here, right? I mean, we have elders all over the world. We have nations all over the world. They have their elders too. You know, I mean, we have the Vedas. We have certain things written down. You know, the Book of Knowledge, and so on and so forth. We have these books. But this seems to be a missing link here today, because of the distancing and the technology and the busyness and the pressures that people are inundated with, that the elders are just thrown aside and they're insignificant today, you know.
Well, what's missing is the children to hear these stories.
Yeah.
You and I were brought up in a time when it was commonplace for the children to sit and listen to the stories. The children were drawn to the fire in the evenings, you know.
Yes.
When the elders came, it was like a magnet, because we knew there were going to be stories. And within those stories were the perspectives that shaped our view of the world.
Yeah.
so that we had something within us as we were growing up to help us put life in its proper perspective. We don't have that now.
Well, there were those were the special times, and everyone looked forward to them. And when you were a woman and you carried a child in your womb, that little one was absorbing and hearing. And then that little child became a toddler, infant, then toddler, then an older one. And through the years and years and years of the growing up of the children, they heard the stories and they were receiving and being taught, unbeknownst to them, the ways and the wisdoms and the, to be and to live and the lessons. Today, you have families with a TV. And they go sit in front of the TV or their phone, their iPhone.
Yeah, that's a nightmare thought to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because you could have an elder sitting in your home. You know, maybe she lives in an upstairs room, you know, and or downstairs, or she's invited to the dinner table or brought down to the dinner table, or he is brought down to the dinner table, and everybody's talking and chatting and blah, 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 and they're sitting there, and then everybody moves to the living room or gets their iPhones out, and there's that elder sitting there, filled with knowledge, filled with wisdom, filled with still life, and they just are, you know, just not essential anymore. That's how I'm looking at it.
I've read a lot of deals that people put on Facebook. Well, somebody will start off with something, some profound saying, and then, you know, they'll send it out, and somebody will add to it, and they'll send it out, and somebody else will add to it. So there probably is a book, something similar to that, started out there that has multiple authors where people actually put their little piece in there. I'd kind of like to see something like that come of that story of Goliath. I'd like to see somebody, you know, take up a new chapter where they talked about their experience, you know. I don't know how it would actually turn out, but I'd be interested to read how that story would affect other people and how they would explain that their experiences were life-changing or not. What do you think?
Well, one thing that comes to my mind, Shaziz, is, I mean, Patty and I, certainly we've read your story, and Patty's rereading it, and how it's still affecting us. And I guess one thing that, one thing I know that you have a habit of saying that you, it may sound crazy. I may sound crazy, but...
Yeah.
And you go on to... But here's why I'm saying this, is because there are many who have had those types of experiences. I'm one of them, and I know Patty's one of them, and I know there are others. And I'm sure that there are many, many throughout the world who may think they're crazy. Well, I'm crazy, and I'm not going to tell that story. I'm not going to talk about this because...
I want to hear the crazy people. That's
well,
what
I want to hear, because they're not crazy, because this is real, this is sacred to me, but when you tell your story, and I tell mine, and Patty tells hers, and so on, this is why I was guided by Spirit to write the books I wrote, because these were my stories, and the information and insight, I'm going to say it, insider information, or the wisdoms that came to me, and the phenomenal miracles, I was told by Creator to write those stories so that people would know that their own experiences were valuable and real and significant, and that they're not crazy.
Well, there's something I want to say real quick, is that I would not want to interfere with the wisdom of your words by continuing on. To me, Shaziz, your story has a message that is profound and that is full of wisdom. This is a story that needs to be told in your voice. Now, there are things called, we used to get around a circle story. You sit around the fire, you begin, and it begins like the fox was walking through the forest and he heard a noise and it passes on to the next person.
Wow.
This is not the same as what you have done.
I
think your story should be intact.
I actually almost sit down and put the keyboard to work again and I probably should follow through with it, but, you know, Goliath and Molly and Spike and all the characters of Pee-wee, all are still in that pond. And so, as I'm sitting down there, I go down there to feed them and all that stuff, and I'm thinking, you know, how fortunate I am that even though the pond, because we're going through this terrible drought, is, you know, taking away their water, and I keep on praying for water and all this kind of stuff, and the story hasn't ended, and, you know, at least not for me or them as far as that goes, and I've actually, you know, contemplated maybe I should follow through and you know, continue to write that book.
What do you think? there are people that have done that. Walt Whitman wrote about his experiences in nature. You know, I mean, that's a book. It wasn't just a few pages or a couple of chapters. I mean, it was his story of his experiences, and I know there are many others. But I'm just saying, I agree with Patty, you know. I think that it's beautiful. Your story may entice someone else or support someone else for writing their own story, you know, in their own words and their own experience, you know, which is really important. You know, but I think your story is yours, your words, your voice, your heart, you know.
Yeah, not you guys say it like that. I get it. I understand. I just want to hear other people's stories. I want to know that, you know, even if my story didn't affect them to write theirs, I want them to not let their story go untold. It's like a lot of these elderly people that we mentioned earlier, they spent some lives that might have been amazing. Some of them might not have been so amazing, but nonetheless, it was still, every life in my view is special. And every person is special. I actually enjoy, you know, hearing other people's stories. I enjoy hearing their trials and tribulations. As long as they're not dwelling into, you know, my life is so terrible and I hate the world kind of thing, but they're just trying to share their experience to hopefully benefit somebody to not to follow the same path that they chose in life to do something good. I think that's how we fix the world. I honestly do. By listening to each other. By listening to the stories of the past so that we don't make the same mistakes. We're still going to war, folks. We're still going to war. It's not the elitist of the world that go out there and put their lives down for whatever the mission was or whatever the perceived danger was. It's you. And your children, and your children's children, and it's a perpetual thing. One of the things that I mentioned that really bothers me a lot was to listen to two little Palestinian girls talk to a reporter one time. And I told this story many times, but it affected me deeply because it made me realize that until you break these chains, it's going to be an infinite loop. These two little children, when asked, do you ever want peace with Israel, they said no because we hate Israel because they killed our mommy and daddy. Well, if you jump on the other side of the fence, these two girls on the other side of the fence might very well say the same exact thing. And from all different nations, no matter where you go, you might find two little girls that would say the same thing. No, I don't want peace. They killed my mommy and daddy. And, you know, when are we ever going to be able to break these chains? It's like the Hatfield and McCoys, years down the line, they didn't even know why the heck they were fighting anymore.
Well, there are people that are breaking that chain there. There are people on both sides, Palestinians and Israelis, who have gone against that rhetoric and that system that tells them to hate each other. And they are coming together in many ways. And listening to each other.
Well, those stories need to be told. All of those stories.
Well, you won't find them on mainstream media.
Well, here on the alternative media, they have a platform if anybody ever hears of a story like that. You know, I want to hear it. You know, do you remember the story we talked about a long time ago where there was a couple soldiers from different sides of a war that on Christmas Eve they all sit, they both sat down and had dinner together?
Yes.
I bet there's a lot more stories like that. But that's important.
You know what? You give me an idea. Maybe our roundtable today, we can have people join us to tell us their family stories, to tell us the stories that they've heard, or to tell us the stories that they've lived. You know, that would be a really good roundtable, I think.
Well, there's a World War II stories, When Enemies Become Friends, War History Online, and I can pop that in. There's many things, Enemies to Friends, Short Stories, Five Sworn Enemies Who Formed Inspiring Friendships, How Two Bitter Enemies Became Best Friends, Inspirational Stories About Making Friends and Losing Enemies. There's a lot of this going on in the world, and you're right, we don't hear about it too much, because there seems to be a plan to keep us thinking that, no, once an enemy, always an enemy, and these are our enemies, you know.
Well, I said something on here earlier that I just read in a quote. I Googled up this deal about hope, about, quote, you know, the best top 10 quotes of hope, and this one just says, wherever my story takes me, however dark and difficult the theme, there is always some hope and redemption, not because readers like happy endings, but because I am an optimist at heart. I know the sun will rise in the morning, there is a light at the end of every tunnel. There's words of wisdom in every heart out there, people.
Well, enemies can become friends. There are numerous stories about this. It's up to a person. It's up to each person if they want to reach out and to become friends, or if they want to maintain and hold that hatred and that you know, that you are my enemy. You're not my brother. You're not my sister. You know, it's all up to us.
Well, and I think that we also have to, we cannot discount the stories of struggle and strife,
yep,
that we have lived, or our ancestors have lived, or that have been told, because they too are very profound in their teachings to us. They show us the way in which we can cause our own suffering or the sufferings of others, and how what we do actually, or what was done to us, affects generations. This is important also. I do agree that those who have stories that are simply filled with angst and filled with rage and things like this, it's a perspective that doesn't have a solution to it. It's a perspective that only has a myopic view of life. But still, in the telling, it's cathartic to many people, because in hearing these stories, you know, when I hear someone who is speaking a story that is full of just pain and suffering, without joy, without love, without any lessons of clarity or anything like this, I still, within myself, form those lessons of clarity. I hear their words, and within me, I say, yes, but if this would have been done, or perhaps this was a better way, or whatever. So even they have teaching. It's just, you know, it's hard to sit here and categorize what is a valuable story and what isn't, because each and every story does have something to teach, no matter how negative or positive the story. It's in the listener's discernment
what
the lesson they want to learn.
To complement what you're saying is that quote that Henry Ford said, and you know what Barbara was saying earlier about mistakes, is that the only real mistakes are the ones you don't learn from, and those are the stories that when they're being told, if you don't learn from that story, you know, like, hey, I don't want to do what you did. That sounded bad. You see what
exactly.
I mean? So, it's not impossible for us to fix the world, people. I mean, it seems impossible. It seems overwhelming. You know, fixing the impossible was the message that we tried to start off with, and the fact that we talked about 6 degrees of separation, where I sent a message out to people about fixing the world and that kind of stuff, and 6 people got the message and delivered it on, and 9 more people, while we were reading it on air, actually liked the message, and I haven't checked it since. But so there's, you know, in their circle, there's people that will see that in their circle. So these words that people like to say, you know, all we do, the Eeyore effect, like Barbara mentioned earlier, the words that we say, that people like to say, that all we do is sit around and talk about things, and we don't provide any solutions. Well, we have provided solution after solution if you had the ears to listen. And so these words, if they're inspiring, they're powerful. And if even if they're not inspiring, they're still powerful, because whoever had the ears to hear them, they got something to say about it. So it's a cause and effect kind of thing. We speak out, somebody reacts, and they react either negatively or positively towards the words that we're trying to share with people. We're just trying to share from our perspective words of wisdom, life experiences, love, and spiritual journeys that we've walked on, and so on and so forth.
Well, I think too, one thing is that, you know, our ancestors lived to tell the stories, and our ancestors' children lived to hear the stories. Today, our elders are not speaking the stories, and our children are not listening. So it's not anyone who says, oh, you're just talking about it. We are trying to do what our ancestors did, and back then it was enough.
Then,
during our ancestors' time, it was enough.
You said it perfectly. What you just said was perfect. It was sheer perfection, because what I was going to try to mention was that we, as the future elders, need to be the ones to restart those words. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yes.
And that's
why we're here. I think that's why the three of us are here, I feel.
Yeah. And so, one of the wonderful things about cyberspace is that we are basically, engraving for eternity into this digital cyberspace our words of wisdom, that even if somebody doesn't hear today, they might stumble across this message tomorrow. And I want to leave a good message for those that... I want people to say, you know, these folks were right. And we did make a lot of mistakes on the way, but had we listened to our elders back in the day, we might have been, had an easier path down our journey. But then they might become the ones that we are today, sitting here, me and these two wonderful ladies sitting here spreading some messages of hope and peace and love and stuff. They might be the ones to take up that and start being the elders that speak the wisdom to their children and help to try to guide them. So these words, as like people like to try to think that these words, are just words and all we do is talk. No. There is a method to our madness. We've been down a few roads. We've seen a few things, and we're trying to share it.
Well, I know one thing that I feel strongly about, that certainly when we have anger towards others, or hatred even on that level, or despise someone, that it's not healthy for us.
Nope.
You know, I think people don't realize that, because it's an energy, a frequency that is very disruptive of your own system, your own physical, emotional, and spiritual system. as compared to if you have love and you can forgive someone or you can let go of that. And, you know, I'm not saying that if someone has really done harm to you, really done harm, I'm not saying that it's all right what they did. But what I'm saying is think about what your anger and that energy is doing to you, to yourself. That's why I'm saying this. It doesn't mean that forgiveness doesn't mean what someone did was not wrong. Mostly forgiveness is to help your own self to be free of the energies that can do harm to you. You know, so that's very important, I think.
I get that. I tell everybody I'm like a sponge, man. If I'm around somebody who's positive, I'm positive. If I'm around somebody who's negative, I'm negative. And I found out the hard way that, you know, I can listen to, I can be a good ear for somebody, but if they're dragging me deeper down into the abyss of negativity, and I allow them to take me all the way down there without trying to bring them back up to some sort of spiritual hope of some sort, you know, to give them, look, I know things were bad in your life, but look, there are options available, there are possibilities, and you're more important than you give yourself credit for. I know that you've been through all this, and I feel for you, I really do. My heart cries out for your suffering, but that isn't where you need to go. You need to come up here and you need to start going towards that goodness that is available out there in this world. And, you know, I can't sit by and allow somebody to talk themselves and me into that abyss, because I've been there before. I know what it has to offer, and it's not good. It's not good to be down there in that darkness and allow yourself and your spirit to be burdened and basically imprisoned by. You know, you turn that little light on when somebody's having the negativity time of their life and they're telling you how miserable and how terrible the world is, you turn that little light on and give them that little bit of comfort. And that's that light at the end of the tunnel that everybody keeps talking about. You personally are that light at the end of the tunnel. And as far as the miracles that you've been waiting for, I've been saying this for as long as this show's been around. I said, if you want to witness the miracle that you've been looking for, walk up there and look in the mirror. You're incredible. You are amazing. The things that you can do, the things that you can make happen just with the words that come out of your mouth, the way that you can affect your environment around you and the nature you want. If you see something broken, fix it. Get up there and do whatever you can. If you can't fix it, patch it up. Make it better until somebody comes along that can help you fix it. We got options, folks. We got things available to us, and we live in an amazing time, a golden era of education and knowledge and just amazing technology that now we can reach across international borders and speak to one another. We couldn't do that before. You could write a letter and hope it would send. You could send a message in a bottle back in the day and hope that somebody would find it and react. But now, you've got a direct line with all your brothers and sisters out there in the world and a conscious choice to make whether or not you want to reach across that land and smack somebody with your words in a violent manner or in a loving manner. And if you want to make this world a better place, what better way than to use the power of the spoken word to inspire their hearts, to go out and inspire other hearts, to make people open their eyes to see all that is wrong in the world and begin to fix it. The breaking those chains that we talked about, the two little girls, I want to hear the stories of the Palestinians and the Israeli girls coming together and saying, you know what, I'm sorry that this happened to you and you're sorry that it happened to me, but we're not going to let this be the guidance to our destiny. We're going to make our world a better place, even if it's just in this little area right here. The two soldiers that met on that battlefield, my God, they put down their guns. They put down their hate. And they opened their hearts and they shared a special time together that if everyone out there could have saw what was going on in that one little point in time, and they could have learned from that example, it wouldn't seem so impossible to fix the world. This is where I come from. This is where my heart stands, because I've been down some roads. I've seen some things that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes on. And I pray to God that no man or woman ever has to see the things that I've seen.
So, I'm going to just end with this here, because I've got to move on today. But I just want to thank everyone for being here. But I want to read this. This might help. Some 6,800 Israelis and Palestinians on both sides of the political divide came together Tuesday to mourn and acknowledge each other's grief for loved ones killed in the conflict at a unique joint Memorial Day ceremony where they called for an end to the violence. All of the 5,500 seats set up for the event in Tel Aviv's Har Yochanan Park were taken, and hundreds more people stood listening while bereaved Palestinian and Israeli family members took turns speaking on the outdoor stage built in front of the grove of palm and eucalyptus trees. Yeah. So I think it's the only event that happens on Memorial Day. Silence is the tragedy. Don't be silent.
People light candles and they come together to honor somebody's life when they've fallen. Sometimes they're not even fallen yet, but they're on their way down or whatever. The people come together and they light that candle of hope for causes. And I've seen videos where it just amazes me. It seems like in the background you can see that people go on for miles. It must have been so warm and so bright in that particular area where all these people, all the different races and religions and belief systems and political ideologies or whatever, but they came together and they lit a candle for a cause. And that's all we're asking you to do out there, is light a candle for a cause. It's that simple. Come together and join us at the round table. That's all we want. We want to hear your stories, we want to hear trials and tribulations and help you through hard times. Folks, the Knights of the Round Table is more than just a dream. It's an opportunity. And if you don't like this particular platform, go out and build another one. And take it and run with it and share this ideas. Take this and take advantage of this technology we have right now. Use it to reach out and touch the world. And do it in the way that you want the world to be. It's as simple as that. So with that said, folks, time to go around the table. Barbara, I think you said you had some things to do. You want to go first?
Well, yeah, I just basically wanted to say thank you again. And I hold no anger or malice or judgments against anyone. In my lifetime, I have had, you know, disagreements come up with people, and always there's going to be that. My goal is to resolve these things. My goal is to share, and to listen, and to know that ultimately we really are all on the same page. We all really want the same thing. I don't hold grudges against people. That's not my nature. I mean, I have had things over the years on radio where people will react to something I might have said. Perhaps sometimes it's a complete misunderstanding. I have done that myself. And I think when we have that issue and it separates us and divides us, and then there's an energy around that, I don't carry that energy. I want to have harmony in my life. I really love everyone. I know that we have differences of opinions and that we have different perspectives, and we have a right to that. But when it reaches a level of outright anger and rage toward a person because they have a different perspective, then I think that, you know, it's up to both parties, really, to resolve it and to come to a better place. Because what purpose is it serving? As I said before, if you hold on to this type of energy, it's only going to really affect you. And perhaps, as it has been shown, it makes people ill. So I think this time, this day and age, I think, like we were talking about listening to the elders, I think we need to listen to each other more. How are we going to solve the issues that we are concerned about in the world if we can't sit and talk with each other and share our different perspectives and even come to a resolve of them, come to some balance with them? We may not always agree, of course, but how are we going to come together to solve or resolve issues in the world that affects everyone if we can't just sit down, or if we just hold grudges against each other for some silly little thing that's meaningless, that I can't even remember, frankly, I can't even remember what the issue was.
Yeah.
I mean, I had, this is a silly story, but I had a woman friend for over 25 years. We were so close. We brought up our children together. She married my cousin. And one time, you know, I'm not a great birthday person. Like, I forget birthdays. It's just something about me. And it's sort of, that really makes people angry, because people are so, you know, into, you have to remember my birthday. And if you don't remember my birthday, I'm going to be angry at you, you know. So I have that problem where I don't remember people's birthdays, hardly remember my own. But anyway, my friend of 25-some years, I realized that it was her birthday, but it was a day after her birthday, actual birthday, and I sent out a birthday card. Well, you could say it's a last-minute birthday card. And so I didn't hear from her for quite a few days, and we spoke quite frequently, very often. And I wasn't hearing from her, so I thought, okay, something doesn't feel right. I wonder what's going on. Is she all right? What's happening? So I contacted her, and I said, I hadn't heard from you in several days. Are you all right? And there was very cold energy when she knew it was me, and she said, no, I'm not all right, and there is something wrong. And I said, well, what's going on? And she said, you forgot my birthday. And I said, no, I didn't forget your birthday. I sent you a card. And she said, well, you sent it after my birthday. I kept the envelope because it showed the day that you sent it.
Wow.
So she actually kept the envelope to prove that I forgot her birthday, because I sent it a day after her birthday, and I hung up the phone on her. That's enough for me. I said, I was in that place. I said, okay, goodbye. I mean, after years of supporting each other, loving each other, caring for each other, helping each other move through terrible circumstances and challenges in our life, and being there for each other, and I was being punished because I had sent her a birthday card a day late. And it just shifted my whole... I saw sometimes friends... I guess your friendship may be time to... You know, it runs out or something. I don't know. Life changes you. But I'm just saying that, that does happen. But people get bent out of shape for the littlest things and end... You know, or attack someone or become angry at someone over a tiny little thing. To me, it's kind of, you know, sad, but that's the way life is. But as I said, I don't hold grudges. So thank you, everyone, for being here.
Wow, I'm listening to your story and I'm watching it like a movie in my head. Wonderful words of wisdom again. It's just, when I look forward, I see hope. When I look at where I came from and know where I want to be, I get emotional sometimes, and sometimes I'd even say I'm mushy or whatever. I'm not quite a man because I cry a lot. I'll tell you what, when you get a heart...
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to scold you.
All right.
So, to me, you are a full man, a whole man, because you share your heart emotion, and there's no shame in that, my dear. Don't be ashamed of that. Don't ever say you're not a man because you have emotion and you cry. I love you for that. I love the fact that you are a man and that you share this beautiful part of yourself. That's really important. That tells me you're a real person. You're a whole person, Shaziz. That's all I'm just saying.
Well, thank you for that. You know, that part of that, part of that growing up when you got those tough uncles that give you a rash because you carried mom's purse from the car. Alright, well, I'm working on myself. I'm not giving up. But anyway, we got to move on to Patty. I'm sure Patty's got some words of wisdom. So what do you think, lady?
I think that the only way that we get through this intact, this thing we call life, and what I mean by intact is with our spirit and our mind and our heart in the right place, in a good place, so that when we become elders, the wisdom that we have garnered through our experiences in life are wisdoms that can bridge the gaps and the gulfs between peoples, between families. The only way that this happens is when we are free to experience our lives, when we are free to understand the truth that each of us holds, the personal truths. I'm not talking about the ultimate truths. What are the ultimate truths? We don't know. We never will. The only thing that we do have, the only thing that we can fall back on that will give us in our elder years the ability to look out at life and not be in regret are those things that we have realized are just a part of life, that it's not personal. And what I mean by that is there are slings and arrows, there are rocks, there are missiles of hate and anger, of injustice, of greed, of all of the things, emotional heartbreaks. All of these things are part of life. They exist and they always will exist. The only difference in those who reach their elder years in regret and those who reach their elder years in understanding and wisdom and joy is knowing that all these things pass. And that the only thing that travels on with us is what we keep within our heart, what we carry within our heart. Life is magic. Life is the grandest adventure that anyone could dream. And every adventure has its ups and downs. It's the proving ground of who we are. It teaches us about strength of character. It teaches us about strength of our own understanding, our own convictions. And it teaches us about the strengths of character and conviction of all of those who we meet. These are all lessons. They're not attacks unless we make them so. Taking things personally in life to the point to where it infringes on our ability to see that wonder and that magic is depreciating to ourselves, and it takes us away from who we truly are, these beautiful beings experiencing this wondrous adventure. We have things to share. We have wisdoms, each and every one of us, no matter how small and insignificant anyone feels, they are greater than every fear they've ever felt, every heartbreak they've ever felt. They are greater than all of these things because we're all in this together, and life is a journey It is an adventure. And it's through your experiences that I'm going to learn who I am in relation to this beautiful world we live in. And I'm going to tell you my stories so that you can see my perspective. And somewhere in between there, we're going to come together. And we're going to find inner standing. It's not a war zone unless we make it so. Even in a war zone, like you said, two people from different sides can come together and sit together. This is the same thing inside. We can fight ourselves all our life about the things we didn't do, about the things we should have done, about the things we did. Or we can make peace with ourselves and understand, as my cat knocks the bottle off, we can understand that we are truly beautiful beings experiencing a very dynamic dream. And be thankful for it. And pass all those experiences and wisdoms on, because your children need to hear them. They need to hear it all. They need to learn. And that's the way we do learn. Anyway.
Right. Love you. Love you too. I always love listening to you speak. You always inspire my heart. I don't know where it comes from, but I'm glad it does. It's a miracle in my mind. But I think maybe to some extent, we're like right there on the edge of being those elders. I think we've learned a lot in the time we've been here. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a worthy thing to share with everybody else out there. So with that said, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. This is what it's all about. We started off at talking about an impossible task, fixing the impossible. And I think we've proven right here that it ain't nothing impossible. It's only impossible if you don't understand what Henry Ford was saying when he said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. If you missed out on that message, then you're probably going to believe on the side of impossible. I believe that all things are possible if we choose to make them so. And so with that said, I'm going to play us out of here with something that I wrote and a wonderful man named Ken read with his amazing voice. He said the message that I wanted to say in writing with his voice, and it made it more powerful. So the power of the spoken word, don't ever underestimate that. You are very, very important. And very special. Peace and love, everybody. If you like anything on this podcast, please share it with somebody.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. into the future and beyond. What we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
Old woman! Man! Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, three dots whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put quick in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhymes that are quite something able. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Shazam's the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.